knowledge fire.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas.
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas.
Andy.
It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
Well, my bright spot today, I've already actually talked to you a little bit about.
Yes.
I watched the entire first season of Traitors.
On my recommendation.
I'd had it recommended before
That's true.
And it first came to my attention. My headphones have now come unplugged.
They're in the wrong ear, buddy. You keep them in your right ear. This is what happens when you switch headphones. All right. You think you got to put it in the left ear, but it goes in the right. And here we are. Change is wrong.
So now I've got the left ear headphone
right ear. Yeah.
Over my right ear. It's backwards now.
Oh my God, you're killing me.
Yeah, but it's how it has to be because the cord has to be over here.
It
There's
has
no
to
way
be over
around
there.
It.
Yeah, it has to be.
I first heard of the show, I think, because I heard that Parvati from Survivor
yes.
was going to be on season two.
Right.
And so I was like, what's this now? What's this show?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had it in my mind, but then I think it was your recommendation that might have put me over the edge.
Sure.
But yeah, I watched all of it. It's fine. Good.
Ah, Alan Cumming.
He's
Doesn't
good.
Get better.
He's good.
Doesn't get better.
Snazzy dress.
I could listen to him say Martha about 300 times a night.
Yeah. You can tell a lot of the times when someone isn't enjoying hosting
yeah.
a show and
yeah,
he's
yeah.
having a blast.
You can. Yeah. There's some time, you know, like with that 007 show where Brian Cox was clearly
yeah.
like, you are paying me way too much money to use zero amount of my talent on this. Fuck it. Let's ride.
And it's the same thing, because in that show, Brian Cox did these like cinematic,
yeah.
weird, like
yep.
vignettes.
For no reason. Yep, yeah. There would be so many reaction shots of him looking to the camera and being like,
Right.
And you're like, you didn't say anything.
And in this one, Alan Cumming is using all of his like ability to seduce a camera.
Yeah, 100%. Yes.
And,
yes.
It's great. It is fun.
It really is great. You can't take your eyes off of it.
My favorite thing about it, one of the people on the show, Christian,
yeah.
is what I described to you as big Nick Rowley
yep.
energy.
Yep.
Reminded me very, very much of a dear old friend from the stand-up days.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that is great about the show
yeah.
that other reality shows should learn from is it's tight. It is tight.
That's true.
They never have that much time to sit around and do nothing.
Yeah.
Like, the schedule of how the show runs is like, this is happening today.
We got to bang it out in a week, man.
Someone's getting murdered tonight.
Yep.
And then we're starting over. There's no days off.
We don't have reshoots.
That really helps.
Yeah.
Because as much as I like The Challenge and, you know, some
sure.
of these other shows,
sure.
there's a lot of fat. There's a lot of fat that could be trimmed. And there's really, you know, the pace
yeah.
really helps keep people on their toes. It's a mystery type show. They're trying to solve who are the traitors among them.
Yeah.
And so there should be that pressure cooker aspect of it.
Oh, totally.
And I think that was wise of them, even if it is probably a budgetary concern.
I think it's also partly the game concern, because they all have to go home to separate. It's like a jury. They all have to be sequestered
mm-hmm.
at the end of every night. Otherwise, the three traitors don't get to be there, right?
Right.
So you don't have all that time of, like, you know, Johnny Bananas in a bunk bed with wearing half a shirt looking at four different people arguing about shit.
Right.
You know, and it's like, no, they're at their hotel going, I wonder what's going to happen. Am I going to get murdered tonight?
Speaking of which.
Yeah.
Johnny Bananas is on the next season that starts soon.
He is not on the next
he
season.
He is.
You are joking.
CT and Johnny Bananas are both
no,
on season
you're
two.
No, you're fucking with me.
I am not.
You are fucking with me.
They announced the cast, and they have no more normies. The first season was half reality show celebrities and
yeah.
half normal people.
Yeah.
And I think that actually was a good blend. But apparently, this time, it's all celebrity types.
No shit.
And so you got CT and Johnny Bananas, both from The Challenge. You got Parvati from Survivor.
Oh, I thought, okay. So I thought
Sandra
the new season, I
Survivor?
Thought there was a new season that was happening right now.
It starts on the 12th.
See, there's a new season in the UK that's happening right now.
Oh, okay.
That I thought was the same show.
Mm.
There's a different host, obviously, and it took me 100 hours to figure
and
out.
Because that one's in Scotland, this one takes place in Arkansas.
Exactly. It's like they're both set in the same castle.
Yeah.
Okay.
The budgetary concerns again.
Budgetary concerns for sure.
But yeah, so I'm excited about that. CT,
yeah.
Johnny Bananas, Sandra Parvati.
Amazing.
What? I don't know who a lot of these other people are from shows I've never watched, but... A lot of Real Housewives.
I'm telling you, I think Johnny's a traitor. I swear to God, I think he's a piece of shit. I've known this guy for 25 fucking years.
My mind reels to imagine like CT as a traitor or as not. He is. He's gonna be gone fast.
CT, if he is a traitor, the moment where he takes off his hood in the little dungeon area, that'll be the best. Everyone will turn and be like, what the fuck are you doing,
See,
CT?
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about this for too long. But
way too long.
I do think it would be fascinating to have this show exist when CT was a violent drunk. So he's one of the traitors, but he keeps getting into fights
and
with people.
And he seriously murders somebody. Yeah.
Anyway, what's your bright spot?
My bright spot, I was kindly asked to be a guest on a podcast called Book Cult by Sydney with Sydney and Delaney. They were very, very nice.
I thought you were going to say you were on Marin.
No, they wanted to talk about my book inexplicably. I think they were through the 10 worst authors, and I was number one.
Look at this false modesty.
2024.
That's not false modesty. It was negative self-talk.
It was really nice. It was really nice. They had found our show, but recently, so it wasn't. And one of them read my book without knowing who I was at all. So that was like, oh, that's great.
Get some unfiltered criticism.
And you know what? Okay is good enough for me.
Hey,
yeah.
We all aspire for okay.
I think
perfect
okay
is the
great.
Enemy of good.
Perfect is the enemy of good, and good is going to get murdered by okay. That's how it's going to be. That's 2024, buddy.
And okay is going to get murdered by CT tonight when he's a traitor.
Oh, man, see bananas. Okay.
We got to get bananas out of here. I can't do a CT accent.
That'd be great.
So, Jordan.
Yes.
Today we got an episode to go over.
Indeed.
And this is a day of wrapping up loose ends.
All right.
If you will.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that means that I found the rest of the Jimmy Dore audio.
Oh, shit.
And I decided we are kind of leaving a dangling thread there.
Sure.
And I don't want it to be like 100 episodes from now, like, whatever happened to that? So let's go ahead. Let's get done with it.
Yeah.
Some stupid fucking shit, but here we go.
I'm looking forward to 2026 when we finally get to Reset Wars.
That might be sooner than you think. Might be sooner than you think. I'll leave it at that,
okay.
As Alex likes to say.
All right.
But before we get down to business on this episode, let's say hello to some new wonks.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
So first, Sam C., thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, go home and tell your mother you're a grifter. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Dawson. A donation has been made in your name to the Transhuman Fund by T. Congratulations. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, hey, Scott with a K. Olson. Are you listening yet? Those were all capital letters.
Oh, yeah.
Love, Jay. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Dan and Jordan, stop saying Sharia law. It's cringed. Signed a Muslim. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Do we say Sharia law a lot?
I think only in the context of whenever crazy people say it.
Maybe.
So I don't think we're actually talking about the real thing ever.
I'll be more mindful, I guess.
Yeah, I
didn't know that we did.
I don't need to. No time.
So we also got a technical guy in the mix, Jordan. So
sure.
Thank you so much, too. My wife's name is Jordan, and her dad's name is Dan. So she's always looking up when I play this podcast in the car. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
And now I'm getting very self-conscious about how we talked about the traitors for a very long time and maybe didn't give a good enough plug for that podcast that you were on. What was the name of it again? Just
book.
In case people are like, I don't want to go
no,
back 20 seconds.
I understand. Book, B-O-O-O-K?
Cult.
Cult. Right. Cult.
Yeah. All available wherever book, you get cult. Your finest
yep,
podcast.
With Sydney and Delaney.
So something that is unfortunately also probably on various podcast platforms
sure,
is
sure.
Jimmy Dore's Dumbass. We talked about our first episode of 2024 yeah. was getting into the old door, swinging the door open. And
now it's time to slam the door shut.
I do think so. Yep. I do think so. Yep. I was left curious, but not really like hungry for more.
Sure.
After the hour and 15 minute or so version that I had heard of their interview, which I went into thinking was the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I was able to find the rest of it, and I don't know if it's unedited. Like, it's what Jimmy put out on his YouTube page.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. It seems about the, like, we're going to start up at about an hour and 15, and that's about where the first one ended.
Yeah, so it's about right.
Yeah. There are little things, like the part before the introduction in our first episode where Alex saying, I only drink what you spit in my mouth.
Sure.
That is cut out. So it's cleaned up a little.
Okay.
So it leaves open like the possibility that some things were like brushed up a little, sure. Which is fine. But either way, we start. I don't know. I don't think this is the same topic they were covering when we last left off. But complaining about homelessness.
If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, Xi Jinping visited San Francisco, and if you've ever been to San Francisco, there's homeless people everywhere. Well, they cleaned that up for Xi Jinping to come there. And just like, so a couple of years ago, Gavin Newsom announced that there was a $40 billion surplus. You could put Alex up. There was a $40 billion surplus in California. And I was like, well, I bet he's going to clean up homelessness and he's going to give people health care. And they did nothing. They did nothing with that $40 billion. And now they're saying it's all gone. And I don't know. And no one knows where it went. And so we know that they could clean, they could end homelessness in America for a fraction of the money that they sent to Ukraine at the blink of an eye.
And restart it and end it again.
That's right. They could have fixed it four or five times over.
Shut up, Kurt.
And they could have sent everybody to college for free. They won't do any of that. So it's I'm developing this theory that they're wanting us to be on edge, and they want us, just like Tucker had talked about it when he was on our show, they want you to, when you go to the 7-Eleven, you have to step over a homeless person and everything's locked up behind cages and you're going to get a crazy person screaming at you so that you will welcome authoritarianism, right? Just like with the terrorist attack on 9-11 did, we became a surveillance state. People gave up their freedoms. By the way, the Patriot Act was on a shelf for years. They were waiting to implement that. And so people just forgot that every email, every text, every phone call they make is being recorded and take categorized and collected by the government. And so I'm starting to develop a theory like, so they keep saying that Trump and Trumpers are going to start a civil war. The people starting a civil war are the corporate media, which are beholden to a handful of billionaires, which are beholden to no country. And it's like they want us fighting. They want us at each other's throats. They want homelessness here. That's why they won't fix it. They want everybody to be on edge and afraid.
So just off the bat, I'd like to say that Jimmy's theory is dumb.
Yes.
But it's right in line with him becoming more and more a part of a community of people who like to craft dumb theories, which seems to be his career trajectory. He'll fit in fine with these guys.
Yep.
So Xi visited San Francisco recently as part of a meeting for the Summit for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC. And in advance of that, a couple spots that were frequented by people experiencing homelessness would congregate. Those got cleared out.
Right. Right,
this was achieved partially by opening up a small number of additional shelter beds, but also by stepping up arrests for drug-related crime and by pushing the unhoused people away from these areas that were near where Xi and other world leaders would be meeting.
Right.
I don't think that Jimmy is suggesting that they solved the problem of homelessness in order to impress Xi, but his messaging is very convoluted here. I understand that he thinks it's hypocritical to just do this in order to not look bad in front of another world leader, but does he support the kind of tactics that were used to put a Band-Aid on this issue? Like, I feel like he shouldn't, but I'm left unclear. So one thing about this clip that I want to highlight is how it illustrates that Jimmy is a person who's prone to bouts of impotent non-curiosity. He has questions that he assumes, he thinks that no one has the answers to, which just results in him spewing and being angry about something that he assumes, like, with the budget.
Sure.
The budget surplus.
Sure, 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 sure.
He says that no one knows what that money was spent on. But if he was curious at all, he could have found that answer very easily.
Oh, because people do know what that money was.
Oh, yeah. In November 2022,
There's an accountant. Yeah. He works there. It's his job.
But it's even simpler than that. The head of the California Department of Finance, H.D. Palmer, was interviewed by Capital Public Radio, and he explained it fully. Quote, so the governor, when he was noting our surplus, said that this isn't going to go on forever. In the past in California, when we've been in good times, the governors and legislatures have thought this is going to go on forever and we can continue budgeting. In doing what we've done so far, thinking that we're going to be in good times for a number of years, it's turned out painfully not to be the case. The governor was very mindful of that back in May, and he said, let's be smart about how we deal with the surplus. And the legislature agreed with him, and they were smart in a couple of areas. They chose to pay down debt for prior years. They chose to build up our budget reserves. They chose to continue reducing our long-term liabilities like pension obligations. And they chose to use a good chunk of the discretionary part of the surplus on one-time spending, as opposed to building a higher ongoing level of spending. And probably the best example of that in terms of one-time spending is the $9.5 billion in inflation relief payments that have been going out this fall to a total of about 17 million Californians and are continuing to go out and will go out through the end of the year. That's provided some near-term relief for Californians who've been hit hard by inflation, but that's a one-time expenditure on a targeted program where we think it had a very helpful result. Mm. All of this was available information for Jimmy, but no one knows where any of this money went.
Sure.
You can disagree with the choices of how the state used the surplus, but just to pretend that it's a mystery and no one knows what happened to the money is intellectually dishonest and the mark of someone who doesn't really care so much about the stuff he's talking about and seems to just be looking for talking points to yell about. Also, Jimmy is saying that the government didn't spend the surplus on ending homelessness or giving people free health care or higher education. That's great. In my mind, those are great things to invest in. But he's talking to Alex Jones, someone who doesn't think the state should pay for any of that stuff. Alex believes that the state paying for any of that stuff is rank communism, and the state would only do it to make you reliant on them so they can more easily exterminate you. Unless the two of them address that ridiculous elephant in the room, their conversation doesn't make any sense. But back to Jimmy's theory about how the man or the globalists want you to be there be unhoused people around, so at the 7-Eleven, you know, it keeps you on edge.
Yeah.
You accept authoritarianism.
Sure.
That's dumb, like I said.
Very.
But it's also very similar to a lot of the theories Alex has, and the similarity is dehumanization. The people experiencing homelessness aren't people to Jimmy, in the same way that refugees and asylum seekers aren't people to Alex. They're a weapon that some evil cabal is using against the good people, like Jimmy and Alex. If you buy into mentalities like this, you're far less likely to connect to the subject you're talking about with empathy, and more likely to tend toward paranoia and hostility. The problem of homelessness becomes something that's secondary to the larger problem you actually are focused on, which is the ways you imagine the man is secretly meddling to try and keep you on edge. This has the result of taking away your interest in working towards legislation that helps unhoused people, because ultimately, what's the point? If you do that, the man is just going to find some other way to keep you on edge. So dealing with homelessness is really just it's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Having this mindset is a very convenient way to continue to pretend that you have left-leaning politics, but allow your mind and everything you do to be consumed by conspiracism, which seems to be what's going on.
I mean, I don't... These people... All of these conversations from these people should have ended the moment somebody was like, hey, Elon, you can fix world hunger. And he was like, okay, I'll do it. And then they were like, you can do it for this money that you won't notice is gone. And he's like, I'll do it. And then he's just like, nah, I don't think I'm going to do it. And he just didn't. Like, if Elon Musk, by himself, already their hero, can end their problem that they're complaining about right now without noticing a change in his bank account.
Yeah. And
then their arguments are nothing to me.
Well, but also the other element that you have to encounter with that is that there wouldn't be oversight and governmental like red tape to get through were Elon to do
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Whereas any attempt to deal with these problems through government largesse and expenditure is going to be violently opposed by people like Alex,
right,
who Jimmy is talking to. One of the big reasons why the government doesn't spend more money on the things that he wants them to, apparently, is because of the person he's talking to.
Yep.
And the world that he represents.
Yeah.
Also, I know they are sending money to Ukraine, but a lot of those giant figures you hear are like military equipment and stuff. So, you don't need that. Here?
I'm not. Yeah.
But either way.
Yeah.
Alex has a response to Jimmy's dumb theory.
Let's hear it.
And it's not a good response.
Okay.
It's not even a bad response.
Okay.
It's barely a response.
All right.
I really am an expert on this because I read the writings voluminously of kind of the high priest of these people. You all know are Hararis and folks. And so a lot goes into this. But at one level, you're 100% right. And there's some other levels to it, in my view. Klaus Schwab has said, we want an angrier world. So they want you to see dystopia and pain. It was declassified that since the 60s, the CIA wanted ugly art, ugly architecture, ugly culture, so that you would
accept
an uglier world and just get used to it and wouldn't demand beauty and wouldn't go along with
art was bad in the 60s
because they were about to end the experiment of America with all its problems and all the issues. It was the wild, wild west.
Wicked, wicked, wild, wild west.
Sure.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but Alex absolutely does not read voluminously stuff by WEF figures like Schwab or Harari.
Yeah, absolutely not.
He knows a couple of out-of-context quotes from them that he's seen in memes, and he knows the extreme right-wing social media talking points that he uses as launching pads to rant, but he's never read any of their books. Klaus Schwab never said that he wanted to create an angrier world. Alex is lying about a CNBC interview he did in July 2020 that was given the headline, quote, WEF founder must prepare for an angrier world. The interview was about how the election was upcoming and we were in the earlier stages of the COVID crisis and Schwab was predicting that the world would likely become more angry. The remedy that he proposes is greater dialogue among countries and stakeholders, as well as a push to provide equal access to things like the medical system. Mm. Since Jimmy is such a big Medicare for all guy, that should have been right up his alley. But you'll never know that that was what Schwab was talking about if your main source of information is liars who make things up about headlines. There's nothing in any of Schwab nor Harari's book about a plot to create an angrier world. This is just something Alex has made up and decided to pretend is a real plan that Klaus Schwab has. It wasn't even on that album of his. Well, maybe
that
it was.
Is weird.
Maybe
that
it was
weird.
Actually in there.
That would have been a great. That would have been a great cut. I would have preferred that one.
I wish that in that whole thing.
Yeah.
That whole album of Schwab covers. One of them was just like Limp Bizkit's Break Stuff.
Sure.
But all the lyrics were the same. Like all the other ones were parody songs
that's
about
just,
you will eat some
just,
bugs.
That's just like, man, this is Klaus's favorite song.
Yeah.
It's time to karaoke it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if Weird Al actually tried to do that album, it would go platinum.
Mm.
I think it'd be great. Weird Al as Klaus Schwab.
Again, the AI voice really ruined it.
It really did.
It's not nearly as funny anymore.
Yeah, it sucks. What I hate about this stuff, especially from Dore, because he's an idiot, and Kurt, he just needs to shut up.
The big effect that these episodes have done is really make you not like Kurt Metzger.
I really hate Kurt Metzger.
You went in with a fairly positive opinion of him.
He was pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
Now I hate him a lot.
It's not going to get better throughout the course of this.
Yeah, I believe it. No, it is that like, this is what they want. They want you on edge or all of this stuff, and nobody can just handle the idea that, like, it is not a they want situation. Houselessness ultimately comes down to, like, there's a guy whose job it is to maximize profits for a business.
Mm-hmm.
That's his job. He doesn't think he's a good guy or a bad guy. He just thinks, this is my job. And there's 100 of those guys, and then there's 1 million of those guys, and then there's a boss who's a billionaire, and then there's a stock buyback, and that's the business, you know? Now there's $6.5 billion in profits instead of $3.5 billion, and that $3 extra billion in profits could have put people in houses.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because some evil guy thought we would need to put people on edge. It's because there's 100 guys, and their job is to just maximize profits.
Yeah.
That's just their job.
And because society has, for better or worse, and despite good intentions from other people, we are apparently complacent with a government that doesn't step in.
Yeah.
And mandate some of these things.
Exactly. Like the idea
of those choices could be made.
A profit cap would end this world, and it makes the most sense of anything. What are you talking about? You can only make blah in profits. But then what? Mm. Well, that's money that you're just taking.
Mm.
It's not money you're reinvesting. You're taking it.
Sounds like you hate freedom.
I do.
So also, Alex is completely wrong about the whole thing about CIA and art.
No, that one actually was made. Yeah.
Mm. So during the Cold War, the CIA funded groups like the Congress for Cultural Freedom that promoted Western art as a propaganda effort against the Soviet Union.
Sure.
The thinking was that the U.S. and Western culture was so much more free and thus more creative, and if it was celebrated, it would be a massive cultural victory over the Soviet system, which was much more traditional and caught up in the past.
Right.
Avant-garde art styles like abstract expressionism stood in stark contrast to the prevailing culture of the Soviet Union at the time, and many have suggested that part of the push in terms of popularizing this style and artists like Jackson Pollock had to do with cultural fronts like the CCF, some of which were essentially CIA fronts.
Yeah. The irony, of course, is at the same time, they are blacklisting Jews for being in Hollywood for making things that people would appreciate in a very similar sense. Weird.
But even in the most, the least generous interpretation of that history with the CIA and art, it wasn't about making Americans accept an uglier world and not demand beauty. It was yet another weird idea that anti-communists put into action during the Cold War.
Yep.
Alex's version is probably a lot more fun, though, and it fits into the conspiracy architecture that Jimmy wants to play inside of, so that's the version of reality that you're going to get out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is weird how a lot of people just did drugs and were like, hey, we're in the CIA somehow. Let's just keep doing shit. And then we allowed it to happen. They just did drugs and then committed war crimes, and that was the CIA until now.
Was this your book? Was this part of your book?
It was a little bit part of my book. I did a lot of research.
A chapter. They did drugs. Now we're committing war crimes.
That was pretty much it, yeah.
So Bilderberg comes up.
Sure.
And Alex talks about his infiltration strategies that he's used over the years.
You mean walking in, reserving a hotel room? Are there any other infiltration strategies?
There's one other.
If you talk to... When I've covered Bilderberg myself more than 10 times, my crew many other times... We get into the hotel a few days before they close it, and I hand out a card and I say, when the Bilderberg group comes here to the waiters and to the staff and to the bartender, to the bellhop, when they come here and you see how rude and evil and mean they are, and you hear what they're saying, here's
all
my
on
phone
a card?
Number, call me and give me information.
This is all on one card?
Or things they throw in the trash, give them to me. I learned that from Jim Tucker, an old reporter that had been covering them since the 70s, and he's dead now, but he was a really interesting, you know, old-fashioned gumshoe. And so they would then be so rude and so mean and never give a one-cent tip. None of them give tips. Hillary Clinton at a restaurant gives no tip. A lot of times skips out on it, and they're all like this. Gavin Newsom, I've told people that know him, they're all like this because they are such sociopaths / psychopathic. They're all on that scale that – to them, they don't understand doing good to others comes back to you. They don't get that if they crap in the swimming pool, they've got to close the community pool because they're so rich and powerful, they're disconnected from ever being in a community pool. So they feel so insulated and so disdainful.
When's the last time you were at a community pool, Alex?
Even though their consciousness is evil, even their genetics still has the old human there, so they subconsciously hate themselves.
Sure.
So they then project onto the public their own self-loathing.
Right.
And I've talked to top psychiatrists about psychopaths and serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
They only feel alive when they're doing something bad or being nasty.
Sure, that makes sense.
And if they do anything nice, they are so hyper-competitive that they feel like they're being cheated.
Wow. I tire of the speculation about how good a tipper Hillary is. Also, I should say, even by Alex's inaccurate schedule of Bilderberg meetings, he said they're in Europe 3 years and then in the U.S. one. Is tipping customary in all of the countries that they're in?
It's just
ridiculous.
It's just us, right?
So anyway, I found an article in Fox News, of all places, from 2007 about how good a tipper Hillary is.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, she and her entourage ate at a Maid Rite in Iowa, where the bill was $157 and they left a $100 tip. Who knows if that's normal for her? I sure don't. People should tip well, but this is gossip-level shit that Alex is trying to exaggerate into being some kind of relevant political point about their psychology.
If anyone, of all the things that Hillary can be, right, once you become Secretary of State, how much you tip will always be less important to me in terms of, like, your standing as a good or bad person.
True.
Than the number of war crimes you commit.
And I would suggest to you that in that position that you're in...
Sure.
You're often not picking up the check.
That's true.
I would assume the echelon of life that Hillary Clinton is at.
That's probably true.
There's usually probably someone who's her body person who carries her card.
At the very least.
Yeah.
At the very least, most lunches can be written off as a business expense.
I would assume, you know? I would assume that some of those decisions are a little bit farmed out to other people.
Yeah.
So Alex has absolutely not physically covered Bilderberg 10 times. He's been to the one in London that we covered for our show in London.
Yep.
He went to that one in Chantilly, Virginia in 2008.
Yep.
And he went to the one in Canada that's included in the film Endgame.
We did see that one.
Outside of that, I'm not sure he's gone to any of the others. And of those, the only one where he definitely got into the hotel was in Chantilly.
Yep.
The other times, he just bullhorned people driving by in cars.
Yep.
Alex has never produced anything that's been provided by Bilderberg waitstaff whistleblowers. It's just the Trojan horse that he uses to launder his bullshit. It's the same trick that Jim Tucker and Daniel Estulin use. They make up stuff about the Bilderberg meetings, and if they need to provide a source, they can say some disgruntled waiter told them about what they overheard in the shadowy back rooms. It's just a parlor trick. Mm. Smart move of Alex, though, not to talk about who Jim Tucker wrote for or how the publication he was the editor of was full of Holocaust denial.
Well.
No. He's just a good old-fashioned gumshoe.
He was a gumshoe. Listen, who didn't deny the Holocaust back then? I was barely even
Quite a few people.
Nah, come on.
There was prevailing... Editorial position.
Among commies.
Well. Yikes.
Yeah, that's... So I don't even feel good saying
that. No. So Alex, in that last clip, said they a lot. They want.
Yes, they want.
And to be fair, Jimmy did too. He's saying that they want everybody to be on edge.
Yep.
But Jimmy wants to know, who are you talking about when you say they?
That is a good question.
We know the answer.
I bet if we all talked about who they were, we'd get a lot of different answers.
You bet.
Yeah.
But we know the answer.
Sure.
And it's the globalists.
Well, obviously.
But then the question then becomes, who are the globalists?
Well, that's not a good question to ask.
But here's Alex's discussion of it.
All right.
Would you define who, when you say they, how do you define they? Who is the they?
There are sociopaths and psychopaths in the Chinese government and corporations.
Already off to a bad start.
Psychopaths in the German government. There are sociopaths and psychopaths in the U.S. government. There are sociopaths and psychopaths in the Israeli government. There are sociopaths and psychopaths in the Russian government. But they've already been through 80-plus years of this, so they're in many ways having a renaissance and trying to get away from it.
That's your pitch?
We haven't fully gone to the bottom yet, so we're going deeper into it. But if you want to know who runs it, BlackRock, you know this, you've covered it. BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, all controlled by the same group of less than a dozen managers, control 88% of world assets and wealth. And they've said, we'll use this to control people. They want to cut off our resources. They're saying, you know, we can't take showers or wash our clothes. It's, and Obama told Africans you can't have a car or air conditioning, but he can have jumbo jets and, you know, palatial, you know, things, you know, all over the place. And so it's a religion of do as I say, not as I do. I'm an anointed one. I'm a priest class.
So I've noticed that when Alex wants to appeal to folks who aren't as far on his side of the extreme right, he'll often stress his opposition to BlackRock a lot more. That's a solid strategic move, since the people he's talking to, in this case Jimmy's viewers, probably also hate BlackRock.
Yeah.
They may hate them for a different reason than Alex does, but Alex can use the optics to smooth that over. But let's get that, let's track this answer that Alex gives when he's asked who they are.
Yeah.
We know it's the globalists, but here we get Alex being descriptive, so we can assume this is a description of the globalists.
Right.
There's sociopaths and psychopaths in all the world governments.
So they're in all the world governments.
So that's the first description.
Yes.
It's unhelpful. Entirely unhelpful.
No. Some people everywhere are doing it.
Right.
That's very helpful.
But there's no connective tissue other than they're crazy people.
Oh, no, there's some people. Okay. There's some of them.
It's also clear from the part that Alex says about Russia that he means communists, which he doesn't have a coherent definition for. All this means nothing.
Well, some people who like to get together and do stuff that anti-communists don't like.
Right. And then I'm also going to extend anti-communist into being like, I kind of hate minorities.
Well, sure, but I mean,
so if there are people who are in support of rights for minorities and things like that, then I think they're commies.
Yeah, that tends to be the case.
So then Alex says that it's BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street. BlackRock manages about $9.5 trillion in assets and is the largest business of that sort in the world, while the other two are also giant financial entities. It's fair enough to say that these three companies represent a significant problem for our country, but it's not in the way that Alex suggests. Alex doesn't know anything about these companies outside of the little tidbits of information that he's gleaned from memes and headlines of articles that he's never read. Case in point, Alex says that these three companies are controlled by the same 12 people, or I think he says less than a dozen, and that they control 88% of all assets and wealth.
That's a lot.
So the first question is, who are these 12 people? Alex has never really mentioned anyone outside of Larry Fink as somebody who's in charge of BlackRock, and the only things that Alex even knows about him are various right-wing culture war memes, like how he supports ESGs.
Right.
Who runs State Street? Their current chair is Joseph Hooley, and their president CEO is Ryan Hanley, but those aren't names that Alex ever brings up, most likely because no one's posted a meme of them yet.
Yeah.
But are they two of the 12? Does Alex know who runs Vanguard?
I mean, I feel like Bill Gates has got to be somewhere in there, right?
Well, no, otherwise, he's in the Council of 13.
Jesus.
I forget the numbers now.
It's 12 because he doesn't do odd numbers like any good council would.
No, but there's a secret baker's dozen.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's where Bill Gates
that's
is.
That's the trick is.
So, like, does Alex know who runs Vanguard?
Nope.
Does the name... I was going to make up a fake name, but then the guy's name ended up being Mortimer Buckley.
That's unreal. Like,
that's a good name.
That's when you're like, oh, maybe we never did get rid of King George. If Mortimer Buckley is a rich person in America in 2024, we didn't defeat the king in 1776.
He goes by Tim. He goes by Tim.
Yeah, I bet he does. Smart change. Smart change, Morty.
So Mortimer Buckley has never been a constant obsession for Alex. Obviously not, because he isn't memeable, and Alex just covers memes.
Right.
But for real, who the fuck are these 12 people?
Yeah.
Vanguard has a page on their website with profiles of their managing directors, and there's 12 of them at that company alone. Mm. They have 13 members on their board of directors, and not much overlap between them. You go to BlackRock, and you've got a global executive committee of 24 people, double the number that Alex is saying make all the decisions between the three companies. What Alex is saying is stupid. There aren't less than a dozen people at these three companies that run everything. It's just that there's a very limited number of people involved in these businesses that Alex has been able to turn into characters. These are businesses, and even if we disagree with their aims and their particular way of making money, Alex's view of them is very reductive. Part of this is due to the nature of conspiracy and how everything has to be boiled down to a small cabal that's in charge of everything. It doesn't serve the conspiracy theorists to deal with BlackRock as a business with 24 members of a global executive committee and who knows how many hundreds or thousands of employees downstream, many of which are the people who manage the investments they hold and who make decisions about those holdings. That gets super complicated really quick, so the image of it has to be that these companies are essentially dictatorships run by figureheads that Alex has been able to turn into characters. Thus far, that's only been possible with Larry Fink, which is why BlackRock comes up much more in Alex's diatribes, but he includes State Street and Vanguard when he rattles off the list because it makes good window dressing. And what about his claim that these three companies, quote, control 88% of world assets and wealth? Is that true? What do you think?
88 seems high.
Yeah,
like a lot of people who get reelected with 97% of the popular vote, that has the same ring of honesty to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not true.
No.
These companies are investment companies, and they put together portfolios for funds for corporate or individual investors to put money into for a bunch of different purposes. Some of it might just be for individual investment. Some of it might be putting together a retirement package or corporate pension funds. And in order to do this, they pool individual and corporate money to invest into these collections of stocks and funds that they put together, index funds.
Right.
It can be a little more complicated than that, but as a fairly basic elementary way to view their role, that's a decent summation. The stat that Alex is citing, the 88% number, is not a percentage of assets or wealth that they own or control. It's an approximation of the percentage of assets that are being traded in the context of index funds that are managed by these three companies. They have what many consider to be an effective oligopoly over the exchange-traded funds or EFT market, but this is not the same thing as what Alex is saying. Still a problem, not the same thing that Alex is saying. That number, which may well be in the lower 80%, does not account for all investment, and it certainly doesn't account for all wealth. That said, these three companies do pose a very serious problem, and it's one that should be addressed. The amount of assets these three companies manage has generally been increasing in recent years, and there's every reason to assume they'll continue to remain in that position, squeezing out smaller index fund management companies. This is worrying from the standpoint of the economy, but there's also another issue that Alex is somewhat right about, but gets pretty much entirely wrong.
Mm.
As the holders of a great deal of stock which they own in these funds, which people then invest in, these three companies have an outsized say in votes within the companies for which they hold stock. In a 2019 paper in the Boston University Law Review, professors Lucian Bebchuk and Scott Hurst cited a statistic that from 1998 to 2017, the average combined stake of BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street in S&P 500 companies quadrupled from 5.2% to 20.5%, and that, quote, assuming that past trends continue, we estimate that the share of votes that the big three would cast at S&P companies could well reach about 34% of votes in the next decade and 41% in two decades. The issue with this is pretty obvious in that it represents a consolidated and very outsized influence that these companies could have on corporate decisions. And this is exactly where Alex has a valid criticism about these companies. He brings up that they have these investments and holdings in other companies that gives them sway, but the only time this ever comes up is when he needs to complain about people being too woke, which is where the criticism goes entirely off the rails. Why is the new Little Mermaid not white? Because BlackRock owns share in Disney and they're pushing their woke agenda. Why is Bud Light putting Dylan Mulvaney on a single promotional can? Because BlackRock invests in Anheuser-Busch and they're pushing their woke agenda. This is the place where the anti-BlackRock type narrative fits in Alex's world, and the fundamental irony is that the role these three companies play in their corporate existence is far more aligned with Alex's politics than he likes to pretend. Alex and his ilk drum up this meaningless but loud opposition to these companies, and maybe they'll make a small dent in their earnings for the quarter, but then things fizzle out and the right-wing culture war obsessives move on to the next meme they're told to get angry about and nothing really changes. The conversation may at times dip its toe into talks of boycotting these companies that BlackRock holds investments in, but even that's an impotent action, but it's about as far as someone like Alex can go.
Sure.
And the reason for that is that all of the viable solutions for the problem that these giant companies present are things that Alex directly opposes.
Yeah.
Things like changing tax structures and regulations around retirement funds. Things like entirely new regulation on corporate governance in the landscape that these giant funds create. Things like hyper-taxation on money management. These are all things that would work to deal with the issue
right.
that this outsized influence has. And they're all things that Alex would start a war to oppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is what is, I think, the lesson ultimately here is that Alex needs BlackRock to exist.
Yes.
Like, Alex does not exist without BlackRock existing, because BlackRock makes all of these conspiracy theories true enough for people to believe.
Yes.
You know,
well,
so,
and it's paved enough of the road
yeah.
that you can veer off it wherever
totally.
Where you want to go, which is the complaining about the Little Mermaid
right.
and Dylan Mulvaney. And
BlackRock needs Alex, because Alex keeps people from criticizing BlackRock for real
because
reasons.
He veers them off the road
exactly.
before the point where there's something actually meaningful that can be
exactly.
done.
Exactly. If anyone is in a conspiracy with BlackRock, State Street, and etc., it is Alex and the right-wing media to make sure that we don't actually address, because real situation.
And just to be clear, though.
Yeah.
You're not suggesting
they're
that
not
Alex
actually
isn't
talking
a conspiracy.
No. I don't. I mean, they have
they have entwined interests.
That's
that
what I'm saying.
That they both are maybe aware of, but I don't think that BlackRock gives a fuck what Alex does.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the 100 business managers
yeah.
just trying to maximize profit. They're
yeah.
not thinking they're doing good or bad. I work for BlackRock. You work for McDonald's. They're doing evil too. What do you want?
Mm.
But that is where we are. And a reasonable society should be able to listen to Alex talk about BlackRock and go, hold on, shut up, stop talking. Then we stop everything. We deal with BlackRock, and then we come back.
No.
Because we cannot do both
no.
at the same time.
No.
I can't talk to Alex and have BlackRock continue to exist.
No, fuck you.
Nope.
Here's what we're going to do.
Yep.
We're going to make videos of ourselves shooting Budweiser cans because BlackRock funds about Anheuser-Busch and they're too woke.
Actually, you've won me over on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, but that is what it is, right? Like,
yeah.
we all agree BlackRock is wrong, and we need to stop them. And the only reason we can't is because rich people.
I think that there's some people who would believe it's less wrong, and some people probably don't even think it's wrong.
That's fine. But they should also probably be getting rid of.
I think that there are at least a fair amount of voices who recognize the danger that this organization, not the organization
sure.
of these companies, but
sure.
the organization of the economy in this way,
right.
the dangers that it can present. And I've, you know, some of the things that I was reading did, you know, somewhat compare this to early antitrust times
yeah.
in a way that makes a fair amount of sense.
I mean, yeah, it's robber barons,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I mean, it is a luxury somewhat. Of 2024, that arguments should be so much shorter now. Because if you cannot look at BlackRock, if you can't look at the situation with BlackRock and that and just be like, they have that much?
Yeah.
That's too much.
It's ridiculous.
If you can't do that, then we don't have a conversation.
Well, but here's the thing. They don't, like own all those stocks. Hear me out.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm not defending.
That's why I'm saying it's a shorter argument.
This is why it's a little bit more complicated. It's not like they have, they own all this stuff and they run all these companies,
right.
And all this.
This is where you and I are going to be in a struggle here, because the nuance is very important for the second part.
Yeah.
What is important for now is the fury.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. Is the only way you're going to get to the second part.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to get there by being like, hey, listen, what we need to do is tax right.
The only problem that I have with that, because I somewhat agree with you.
Yeah.
Is that fury is the thing that gets you derailed.
Right.
And fury is the thing that someone like Alex can distort and use. He can use right. that as his clay.
Well, and that's
the only one of the only reasons that I would try and put a pause on advocating fury.
No, I agree with you.
I also think that unchecked fury in some ways can lead you to think like, well, what I should do is blow up a BlackRock building or something. And that's not necessarily what you should be saying
this,
either.
On this most glorious of anniversaries.
It's the 7th.
I think it's important. no, it is undirected fury. And that's where we get into trouble. Because on one side,
Undirected fury will get directed by Alex, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Nobody else is directing it.
Right.
Nobody else is willing to, because there is the idea that if you direct fury, period, you are the bad guy.
Mm.
And Alex, the only people who are actively doing it are the bad guys. And so we have a complete abdication of responsibility towards directing righteous and real fury,
yeah.
And a giving up to it to Alex.
There may be something to that.
Mm.
So Alex can't really oppose BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street in any meaningful way, because there really isn't a solution outside of getting the government to impose some kind of guardrails.
Yeah.
The only other option really is to get investors to not invest in their various funds, but the odds of that happening is essentially zero when their funds are the best performing ones.
Make less money! No!
The solution Alex has of demonizing companies that are too woke and maybe getting their profits down temporarily doesn't make even the smallest difference for the companies.
Really doesn't.
At the top. So if these three companies are the ones behind the globalists, then strong government intervention is what needs to happen. And you can count on Alex to never support that happening. Trump isn't going to do it. Vivek isn't going to do it. But ironically, there's a decent chance that Biden could. For all the criticism that he gets, one of the things people don't talk about enough is Biden and his administration showing a lot of promise in the realm of antitrust issues.
Mm.
They have multiple investigations into things like Live Nation's effective monopoly over ticketing and Visa's relationship with competition in terms of payment processing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has not come to fruition yet,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's not that it never will.
Sure.
This is coming down the pipeline.
Sure.
And it's not stuff that's gotten to the level of these like index funds. But there's an indication in how Biden's administration has moved that they're taking monopolies more seriously than predecessors and more seriously than he often gets credit for, because it's easy to see very obvious ineptitudes in some of the things that he puts forth and the Biden administration does.
Right. But I mean, that's also part of that's hamstrung by the stuff he did in the past. You know, like
sure.
Part of the reason that the executive branch can't handle this, because that's a case that'll take 10 years in court to really deal with, you know.
Some of that's coming down the right. pipe in theory this year.
Sure, sure. But I mean, then there's a new executive, and then all of a sudden, you know, and it's like because of the amount of money and because of the way that they've set this up over the past 40 years, that is a thing that they can take advantage of. So, yes, he's doing this, and the reason he's not doing it as fast as people want him to is because of shit he did in the past. You know, it's like you win some, you lose some.
There may be, but I don't think that is in any way is like something that should take away from like the argument to do it.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm saying that this is where we are, where it's like I understand he doesn't like that people aren't giving him credit for that shit.
I'm not saying this because Biden told me to.
No, I'm not saying you are either.
I'm not saying that Biden called me and he's like, hey, Dan.
No,
look, people are
credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
You know, that is true. But the problem there is like, I agree with you. This is just where the government, this is how the government
right.
works. They're just guys
but
doing their job.
At the same time, if Alex were going to bet on a candidate to take on the fight that he wants.
Yeah.
He should choose Biden.
Well,
he's not going to do that because his opposition to these companies is it's not sincere. It's political theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is, I think, important, generally speaking, when there's something to Alex's thoughts and ideas that does make sense
right.
and has some kernel of truth, to not shy away from that.
Mm.
And his criticisms about how much control, in theory, over the voting by virtue of the ownership of stock that these companies have is, at its core, a decent point. It goes wrong, but that to pretend that like that isn't the point just because Alex is saying it is not fair.
And it gets back to that same like that ratio thing, you know, like at a certain point, Alex is describing a problem that is more important to handle than the problem of Alex. You know what I'm saying?
I still wouldn't team up with Alex to solve the
problem. No, I don't mean team up with Alex.
I'm going to retain my problems with Alex.
I don't mean team up with Alex. I mean that because Alex is talking about it, people are going to look at Alex as the problem.
Right.
Instead of being like, hey, this time, Alex, you're still the problem. But these guys are, shut up. We're leaving you alone. Fuck off. Yeah. We got to deal with these guys first.
Sit this one out. Go on another non-vacation vacation.
Here's what we'll do, Alex. We're going to go deal with BlackRock. And then when we get back, you see what your conspiracy is. That's what I feel like the answer should be.
Well, because ultimately...
There's going to be another conspiracy,
well,
sure.
But we'll have
taken care of BlackRock.
But ultimately, any attempt that Alex and like his sort of type... would have any influence they would have in trying to solve the problem of
would
BlackRock.
Only give them greater exactly. power. Yeah, which is why we have to do it.
Well, not me. I don't have a lot of control over these
it's
things.
Time to
but,
do it. Yep.
So, look, one of the things that characterizes this interview is Jimmy is asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, that's
right.
There
is nothing going on.
Okay.
He just lets Alex ramble for such long stretches.
So if you look at the brain of a Henry Kissinger and the brain of a Zbigniew Brzezinski,
can we?
One is Chinese, one is Jewish. Or the mind battle of Hitler. Hitler said everybody else is weak and dumb, survival of the fittest, social Darwinism, we're going to kill everybody that doesn't go along with us, and some will be left as slaves, but really we'll get rid of them later. And people say, well, why is Yuval Noah
Harari Charles Lindbergh?
Saying we don't need humans, it's time to get rid of people, the future's not human. Hitler just said the future isn't anybody but an Aryan, which is bad enough. Yuval Noah Harari says the future ain't even human. That's a quote. He says humans are gone by 2047. And you can read NBC headlines, the same thing. A New York Times headlines, looking forward to the end of humanity. I'm in the grocery store checkout lane, saw a similar headline last week. It's telling you, you're garbage, you're filth, you killed the earth, don't have a life force, don't have a survival instinct, you're killing everything. Look at the garbage, look at the homeless, look at the everything. Die, roll over, don't live, don't thrive, don't contend for the future, don't affect the future, because we have the Renaissance system of believing in humans and egalitarianism and classical liberalism and really empowering people, but doing it through the classical human system. That's the great awakening that we're in, that's countering the great reset, the war against the globalists, defeating the globalists and launching the next great renaissance. And they can't compete with that. They are a evil stinking witch.
What?
That's literally trying to hand out poison apples versus
literally.
Marilyn Monroe in their prime. Freedom in the Renaissance and liberalism, real liberalism, is Marilyn Monroe in her prime. And the New World Order is like a Skeksis from the dark crystal. They have to make everything ugly because they're ugly spiritually, culturally, metaphysically, and they need everything ugly to camouflage themselves because they're so fallen.
So...
Don't.
I just learned recently that the AP, the news service, the AP, the owners of the AP, is it the Rothschilds?
They own a lot of stuff through BlackRock. They also own The Economist magazine.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so Jimmy just let Alex rant about basically nothing for minutes end.
Can you do that? I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, barely.
I feel like that was a complete, like, oh, I wasn't listening at all.
Marilyn Monroe is hot. Skeksis are ugly.
Anyway, so the AP.
Yeah.
Are they owned by the Rothschilds?
Yeah, like, he just lets him go on, and then the rejoinder is to spout an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory about the Rothschilds owning the AP. Before we get to that, We've talked about the Rothschild family's connection to The Economist. Yeah. That has nothing to do with BlackRock, and the Rothschild family doesn't own BlackRock, as Alex is clearly suggesting
there.
No one owns the Associated Press, per se. It's a non-for-profit news organization that began and continues to exist as a co-op. They began in 1846 and to this day retain exhaustive corporate archives that contain their, quote, news, administrative, and government arms. And what do you know? They weren't founded by, nor are they owned by the Rothschilds. But you know what? There was a meme that periodically circulates in right-wing social media that claims that the Rothschilds own the AP and Reuters. So it looks like Jimmy saw that and counted that as learning.
Huh.
He learned that recently.
Weird.
It's fucking cute.
You can just see something on the internet and that's learning.
Yeah. The only reason you'd say something like this is if you're a complete idiot drawn in by conspiracism so deeply that you have no clue what direction is up, or possibly to lay an expert trap to get Alex to endorse this obviously idiotic position that is based in an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory so you have a gotcha moment. And I assure you, it is not the second one.
Okay. All right. You know what? Let's back up. I'm sick of caring about real world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back into where I belong. Comedy. All right.
Okay.
You just had Alex Jones go off on a whole jag about how the future is Marilyn Monroe or whatever.
Right. The Patriots.
Whatever.
Renaissance.
I don't give a shit what his actual words are.
Right.
The point is, you've got Jimmy Dore and Kurt Metzger, ostensible comedians.
Yeah.
And your response to that is not to riff, is not to enjoy yourself. It's to go, hey, I heard the AP owns the Rothschilds or whatever it is. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. Have fun.
Yeah.
How
no.
dare you?
No, there's no fun here.
How dare you
just
pretend to be? Stop doing stand up is over. Everybody should be done.
Jimmy's got some tour dates coming up.
That is not real.
I bet he does.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, the rest of all that, the stuff that Alex is saying has no connection to reality.
Yeah.
He's just taking input he refuses to understand, like Harari's writings or the article with that headline, Looking Forward to the End of Humanity, and ranting about his feelings about them. If you're drawn into this meaning anything, the only thing you're doing is taking Alex's emotions on as truth and then pretending that it's something that's based in sources and information, and you're a fool.
Yeah, you could be like, oh, Patriots are done. You're like, ah, Alex, you're the hot air underneath Marilyn Monroe's dress. Ah, you know, you just got just fucking something. Acknowledge the man said something ridiculous.
No.
Otherwise, I feel crazy.
Well, you're going to keep feeling crazy.
I feel fucking crazy that he responded to that with like, ah, I heard the Rothschilds own the AP.
Mm. Interesting.
How dare you?
So Alex has heard about the Rothschilds. And so now it's time to spout some fucking Nazi propaganda.
There we go.
And yeah, the Rothschilds, and that's a whole other story. I'm sure you know it, but the British Empire was dominant until 1815.
Oh, God.
But it was in complete control for 100 years after that because the Battle of Waterloo was so decisive, defeating the Continental forces of Napoleon Bonaparte for the second time with the Prussian-British pincer attack, that the Rothschilds, this is on record, sent a carrier pigeon to a fast corvette ship to race across and to tell everyone when the stock market opened that morning that Napoleon had won and that Lord Wellington had been smashed. And the stock market went down 99%. The Rothschilds then bought up 99%. This is on record, 99% of the stock market. So they weren't just the richest family in the world up until that point. They were the richest family in the world up until that point on record. Okay? Married into the British royalty, everything. Then after 1815, the Battle of Waterloo, they owned the British Empire. They all the major stocks, they got it. Of course, Napoleon really lost. And they only had 6 hours. 6 hours before they came in and said, no.
6 hours.
Wellington has won.
It's tight.
It's almost hard
Wellington
to believe.
Wellington has won. And then it all shot back up above where it even was. So look for them to do this again with a cyber attack. They're saying Trump supporters with no evidence working with Putin
with a cyber attack
to cancel the election. The election, he's 10 points ahead in or more.
Okay. So we've talked about this many times, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But in case there are people listening who haven't heard some of our older episodes, this story about Nathan Rothschild is not true. It's a piece of anti-Semitic lore that's been passed down over time, most prominently by the literal Nazi propaganda film called The Rothschild's Share at Waterloo, produced at the command of Joseph Goebbels.
Oh, and while we're here, we might as well plug Jewish Space Lasers and Mike Rothschild's excellent book. Yeah.
Yep. I was going to say Mike Rothschild Rothschild, but I was looking at my notes and the name Matthew was there.
Ooh,
and I almost called him
nice.
Matthew Rothschild.
Nice.
So anyway, this film, The Rothschild Share at Waterloo, was part of a concerted media campaign to demonize Jewish people that included this film, as well as the, a little bit more blunt, The Eternal Jew. So this story about Nathan Rothschild and the getting early information about Waterloo and using it to his advantage at the stock market traces further back to an 1846 pamphlet that was written by someone using the pen name Satan. The person behind that was a deeply anti-Semitic dude named Matthew George D'Arnville, who really hated the Rothschilds. Mm. He wrote that pamphlet making up this story. It gained popularity in anti-Semitic circles until it was made far more popular by literal Nazi propaganda material and is now endlessly parodied by idiots like Alex Jones and probably Jimmy Dore in the future because he learns from memes.
Yeah, I give it 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, until he just repeats it as something I learned recently.
Yeah, you know who told me this? I can't remember who, but it sounds a lot like Alex Jones.
Oh my God, I learned this really fascinating thing about 1815.
Man.
Great.
I'm always a fan of, like, guys like Alex's understanding of military history always fascinates me. Like, all this, like, oh, it's all about the pincer movement and all this stuff. And it's like, man, war up until, like, a few years ago, really, it's just who shit themselves to death less.
So what you're telling me is
like,
it was
that's
like
who,
chess.
It's dysentery. It's dysentery.
It was like chess.
It's like Oregon Trail is
Whereas
what it's like.
Now it's like Risk.
Now it's a little
overlay
bit,
of Monopoly.
Now it's more like the Yukon Trail.
Huh.
The sequel to the Oregon Trail, where you only slightly die of dysentery most of the time.
War is like Fortnite.
Actually,
this is Alex's new special report.
I think that one is true.
So, Alex goes deeper into this. This is just fucking dumb. Mm.
They all admit this at the academic level like we're dumb animals. I'm just reading what they're actually saying. And they, in mainline PhD history books, they admit all this about the Rothschilds. Mm-hmm. Now, I go on air and say it. They go, oh, anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with Jews to say that the Rothschilds did this and are super powerful.
Aha. I have an argument against
that. Chinese, because Xi Jinping is bad. Am I saying Chinese are bad? No, I'm not. But it really is true that that's how a German Jewish banking family who ran pawn shops, basically, in Germany and loaned money to people. That's how they parlayed their wealth from 500 years ago by 1815 to rule most of the earth. The sun never set on the British Empire. Then World War I, the Austro-Hungarian Empire had gotten so dominant, I don't mean to give a history lesson, but it's important to know, that the British intelligence and the Black Hand assassinate Franz Ferdinand, the Archduke, the Germans all go crazy because they were winning with all the new patents, all the new science. The British newspapers were talking about the German problem, and they're going to. So the British Empire was corrupt, overextended, and so World War I was started by them. World War II was Hitler; he was bad, but the Versailles Treaty and all that led to Hitler coming to power.
You can read too many books on World Wars,
Hitler, but nudged him and funded him early on to have a new enemy.
So, Alex, I mean, a lot of this isn't real history.
Yeah.
But what he's doing as it relates to the Rothschilds is textbook anti-Semitism, and his denial of that really doesn't matter.
Mm.
They don't teach the Rothschild share at Waterloo at the academic level, unless you're studying to be a Nazi.
Yeah.
What is this?
Is there an
what
academic
is this
level
condescending
for that?
Ass shit? Is what they teach at the graduate level.
I mean,
the Black Hand didn't assassinate Franz Ferdinand, and all the rest of this shit is just bogus fake history. We went over pretty much all of this when we covered the film Endgame, so if you want to hear more about that, it's all there.
I'm amazed, really, that people, like, I don't think, in this one space, truly, I don't believe it is anybody's fault, not Alex's, that he does not know any accurate history of this time period.
Mm.
I mean, if you're like a 60-year-old dude, you have to stop and think, how many documentaries and shit on World War II and World War I have I watched?
A number.
You know, like average for a 60-year-old white guy, a million.
There are
right?
a bunch.
Yeah. Like, how could you even keep straight in your mind what facts are and are not true anymore?
Now imagine that you're a guy who's about 50, and for most of your life,
ooh, your whole life was just one of those documentaries.
You've been really beholden to news sources that really want to excuse Hitler.
They really love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now think about how skewed your version of history
tough,
would be.
Tough to view it accurately.
Crypto Nazis and shit. Anyway, Alex rambles some more about world history.
Sure.
And then Kurt comes in with something that really scares me.
Okay.
After World War I, the British Empire made a deal, and even Teddy Roosevelt wrote about this.
Bully.
It was Churchill, Winston Churchill wrote the three-volume set, The Histories of the British-Speaking Peoples.
Yeah.
He was half American.
Shut up,
He
Kurt.
Says in there, we came over after World War One. We set up the CFR. Mm-hmm. We merged British intelligence with U.S. intelligence.
Right.
And then that is the Anglo-American Empire. They call it themselves. And Putin says, I'm fighting the Anglo-American elite.
Yep.
I have no problems with the Americans. He said, I have a problem with your Anglo-American oligarchs. He calls us the Anglo-Americans. And who are they? The Anglo-Americans come from a Norse tribe that later became William the Conqueror and took over France. And they came and took over England. So if you go back to all of this, they take the name of William the Conqueror's group from 1,000 years ago.
Alex, have you seen and it is unbelievable if you ever see it. There's a movie about the Rothschilds that's black and white that's made by them to promote them, and it looks like something Hitler made to smear them.
Huh. And it's so,
their thing bragging about their family.
Maybe
history.
We it's put two and two together.
No, yeah.
They made it, but it looks like they didn't make it.
It's crazy if you ever you find it.
So Alex's history is all over the place and kind of meaningless to break down, but those guys sure do love Putin.
Yeah.
I'm getting the sense that maybe they actually love Putin more than their anti-war guys. But who's to say? Who's to say, really?
What the fuck is going on?
I don't know.
How is Putin popular?
I don't know.
I don't understand it.
Well, maybe directionless rage plays into that, too.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
So I'm going to give Kurt Metzger an amazing and undeserved benefit of the doubt and say that maybe he's talking about the American film The House of Rothschild, which was not made by the Rothschilds, but was created as an anti-Nazi film in 1934 and presents the Rothschilds family in a positive light.
Okay.
It doesn't, however, look like Nazi propaganda. And if Kurt is suggesting that the film he saw seemed like that, I think he might have seen the Nazi propaganda film The Rothschild Share at Waterloo.
See,
I'm not
that
sure.
One sounds more likely.
But it's hard to say. It I further like suspect perfect. This because that film includes the story that Alex just told, whereas the American one doesn't. So that kind of seems like trouble.
That's important.
So that film, the Nazi one, came out in 1940, but was also in black and white. So the only way I can really figure out if we could get to the bottom of this is if Kurt said what language the movie was in, and he doesn't say that. So if it's German, that's Nazi shit.
Well,
if it's in English, then it's the House of Rothschild. Probably.
I find it hard to believe that a man can say, it looks like Nazi propaganda, without going, maybe it's Nazi propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Not once did he even think, it didn't even occur to him.
He thought, he's laughing about it because he's a humorist.
He's a yep.
So now the topic shifts to immigration.
Great. I'm looking forward to their interesting discussion on how people should immigrate to places.
Sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to just touch on the immigration problem because I've totally flipped on this.
Is there an immigration problem?
And I was always immigrants, the better, which I still love immigrants. We're a whole country of immigrants.
You should just stop there.
But I noticed that this situation is being manipulated, and I couldn't really put my finger on why. Why are they having an open border? And what which they are. And right now, you have cities. Eric Adams in New York is screaming that their whole city is going down the toilet because they can't handle the influx of all these immigrants that are coming to his city. It used to be a sanctuary city, and now he's trying to find a way to get them to stop, but they're not stopping. And I was listening to Dick Durbin, who's a senator from my old home state, Illinois, and listen to what he says. Here's one of the reasons why they want to get as many immigrants as they can in here. Watch this.
The presiding officer, my colleague from the state of Illinois, has legislation which addresses one aspect of that. Her bill, and I hope I describe it accurately, says that if you are an undocumented person in this country and you can pass the physical and the required test, background test, the like, you can serve in our military, and if you do it honorably, we will make you citizens of the United States. Do we need that? Do you know what the recruiting numbers are at the Army and the Navy and the Air Force? They can't reach their quotas each month. They can't find enough people to join our military forces. And there are those who are undocumented who want the chance to serve and risk their lives for this country.
They don't want to serve in their own military in their own country. They want to go to a foreign country and serve in their military. This is quite,
that's called mercenaries.
Yeah, this is kind of how this is how Rome ended. No, and
what?
So he's giving the game away there. He says it right out in the open. We have to fill our military with foreigners.
Like, cops and our farms.
And have our be our farm workers, have them be our medical workers, and our military, and have them be our cops.
I'm not sure what the issue is here, at least not for Jimmy. I understand that Alex is a xenophobic racist and sees any erosion of white control on power, or white power, as a threat to himself. But with Jimmy, that doesn't quite make sense.
I don't understand.
I guess if I'm to be as generous as possible, then this must be coming from his stated anti-war position. He must not like this because we don't need any more soldiers, since we shouldn't be fighting in all these wars. But in that case, this is a military size issue, not an immigration issue, and Jimmy said that he flipped on his position on immigration, which is where this idea started. Jimmy used to think that the more immigrants coming in, the better, but now he doesn't. He hasn't specified what his actual position is, but the change in thinking has something to do with offering immigrants paths to citizenship that involve signing up for military service. I don't know, but maybe I'm small-minded, but I have a tough time seeing a way this shift in position isn't really just him catering to the audience he's carved out by hanging out with folks like Tucker Carlson.
Why would you, here's the only reason you can have an opinion on that is because you watched Starship Troopers or you read Starship Troopers and you either agree with the movie you watched or the book that you read. Mm. So either you go, this is dystopic, fucked up shit. Or you go, yeah, we should really kill immigrants. Like, there's only two ways to go here.
Don't you worry. We'll get plenty of sci-fi movies later. Don't worry.
I know.
I don't know as much about exactly what Dick Durbin was suggesting, because typically...
Watch the movie Starship Troopers.
Well, but typically a lot of these folks who have tried to get these bills passed for, you know, various, like, police jobs and stuff, it's for resident non-citizens.
Yeah.
It's not for undocumented immigrants. I'm not sure if he misspoke or if that is actually what the bill is.
Sure.
But either way, it doesn't matter. I don't understand what Jimmy's point is. And it is just a, hey, let's kick the door... Pun?
Nice.
Let's kick the door open for some fucking racism.
All right.
Well, I can tell you exactly what's going on, and you're dead on. Look, there's UN documents. Before that, there's a 100-year-old called Kalergi plan in Europe. And the royalty got together and they said, our people are too uppity. But if we bring in giant third world populations that we control and that we put on government jobs and government assistance, it'll be a new Praetorian Guard for us. But it's worse than that. If you go back to the lockdowns that only went on for like a year and a half here or in Europe or Australia, they went on under IMF World Bank control over those countries that are in deep debt to the central banks. They were under two and a half, 3 year lockdowns, and they did big polls of the migrants. And they said, there's no jobs, the farms are shut, the factories are shut, I'm starving to death, I've got to come here. So they're victims of globalism being shut down. And
yeah, big polls.
That makes sense.
So pure and simple, Alex is just regurgitating white nationalist talking points. He whipped out the Kalergi plan reference real fast. And that was interesting because, man, he doesn't use that name much. I think that Alex knows on some level that using that name, the Kalergi plan, is kind of signifying pretty clearly that you're a white nationalist or white nationalist adjacent, sure. And I guess he's fine doing that here. I have a strong suspicion that what's going on is that Alex is subtly testing Jimmy. Alex very seldom uses that name, even when discussing his immigration-related conspiracies, so it seems to me that this might be a bit of a trial balloon. If Jimmy shows awareness of this name, and actually Kurt seemed to, then maybe they're on the same team as Alex. If Jimmy doesn't push back on him when he brings it up, Alex at very least has learned that he's talking to someone who has no idea about the history of these ideas that they're discussing, so he has free rein to just say whatever he wants.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as the Kalergi plan. Richard von Kudenhove Kalergi wrote a book called Practical Idealism, which speculated that in the future, distinctions between ethnic groups would disappear as cultures intermingled.
Right.
This was repurposed by Nazis and white supremacists as being indicative of a plan to force non-white immigration into peoples to destroy the white race through forced intermingling.
Right.
In his text, Kalergi is wrestling with the differences in different sorts of population. Rural versus city dwellers, the junker versus the literati, the gentleman versus the bohemian. And in this particular section, the inbred versus the crossbred.
Hey, good work, buddy.
Not great stuff all
around.
Nice
timing.
To be honest.
You're going
to
be great.
So in that section, he says, quote, Truthful people are always silent, because every claim is, in a sense, a lie. Pure-hearted people are always inactive, because every act is, in a sense, wrong.
Okay.
Bravery right, is but to speak when the risk is a lie. To do and to act risks injustice.
Boo!
A little poetic.
Rewrite!
This is still a quote.
Okay.
Inbreeding strengthens the character, weakens the spirit.
What?
Crossbreeding weakens the character, strengthens the mind.
What?
Where inbreeding and crossbreeding meet under happy auspices, they bear witness to the highest type of human being. The strongest character combines with the sharpest mind. Where inbreeding and mixture come together under unfortunate auspices, they create degenerative types of weak character and dull mind. Man will be hybrid in the distant future. Today's races are increasingly falling victim to the fact that space, time, and prejudice are being overcome. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, outwardly similar to the ancient Egyptian, will replace the diversity of peoples with a variety of personalities. So anyway, clergy sucks, but in a different way than Alex and his white supremacist buddies say.
Yeah.
There also is no clergy plan, and I would bet anything Alex doesn't even know the name of that text, Practical Idealism. It's just a Nazi meme that he likes to spout while he waddles around pretending to be an intellectual.
Yeah.
Also, there was no real lockdown here, and it definitely didn't last a year and a half.
Yeah.
Certainly didn't last 3-4 years in these unspecified other countries either. So weird. Alex is never specific about any of that stuff. Like, almost like he's like riffing on vibes.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy should never have learned about those pea pods and how they breed and stuff. That was a bad move.
Should have gotten into the Mendelevian.
We should all have just been like, maybe let's not mess with it. Maybe let's not mess with it, because sooner or later, some asshole is going to have some real bad ideas, and then here we are.
And write about it very flowery, languagey.
Wow.
I mostly kept that part where it, well, because I thought it would annoy you.
You thought it would kill me, man. It did. It did. It broke my heart, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Alex weaves from this to a pretty racist conspiracy theory.
All these blue cities have passed laws for illegals to vote in local elections. They're under
why?
The control
we
of
already
local
won.
Community organizers. They're told how to vote. Now they get fast-tracked into the military. They purge the military with the shots and critical race theory.
What?
And so all the professionals get out.
Critical race theory?
Now they're going to replace it with the domestic security force that Obama talked about that's just as big and just as strong as our military. And Illinois and other states are passing laws to have illegal aliens, as your co-host said, be the police. So you nailed it. History doesn't just rhyme, it repeats. Rome started doing this, and in a couple hundred years, they collapsed because the enforcers they brought in said, hey, we're the bosses. Well, this won't take hundreds of years.
So we talked about this on a recent show, but all these blue cities aren't legalizing undocumented immigrants voting in local elections. There are a couple of places that have made it so non-citizen permanent residents can vote in things like the school board election where their kids go to school.
Yeah.
Racist lie number one.
Yeah.
These non-citizen residents are not under the sway of community organizers who tell them how to vote for school board elections. Racist lie number two. Mm. No one's getting fast-tracked to the military. Racist lie number three.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Mm. They aren't purging the military through vaccines and critical race theory to remove the professionals so they can be replaced by immigrants. Racist lie number four.
How would you purge the military with critical race theory? Just as your only tool, all right? You've got a military. Let's video game this, right? Mm-hmm. We've got a military. 15% needs purging, all right? Your only tool, critical race theory. How do you do it?
I don't. Damn it. I can't pull a good reference, but you just chase people around the room with a book, I guess, by one of the people who wrote about critical race theory.
All right, so you start with the TV show Ghostwriter.
Yes.
All right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. I mean, it's just buzzwords.
Yep.
Obama's domestic force was stuff like the Peace Corps and Trump
Corps.
Yeah,
I was going to say, wasn't that
it wasn't
like
police and military.
Wasn't like volunteer to help at grocery stores sometimes, I guess.
That's just the propaganda narrative that Alex has fraudulently been peddling for a decade. Yep. Racist lie number five.
Yeah.
No one is passing laws to allow undocumented immigrants to be police. There are conversations about how it makes some sense to allow non-citizen permanent residents to be allowed to pursue careers in law enforcement, which is a very different thing. Racist lie number six.
Yeah.
As you can see in that short 45-second clip, Alex spews out six distinct lies that are all based on fake racist and xenophobic propaganda. This is what his entire point is based on, and all Kurt and Jimmy can do is impotently nod along and let their audience digest this as if it's real. This is either an indication that they're dangerously ill-equipped to have the conversations that they're having, or they belong on fucking InfoWars. So they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just I'm just so confused by the show aspect of this.
Yeah.
I think that's what keeps that's what I keep coming back to is like, okay, I'm fine with the idea that they've got Alex on to do the thing, you know. I'm not understanding how it is that you're supposed to be Jimmy Dore and Kurt Metzger and your best show is like, yeah.
I don't know if this is their best show.
I mean it looks like they're doing their best.
I don't see a lot of effort being exerted.
Well, I think that might be our problem.
That is true.
Yeah.
You know what though? You let Alex come in, you let him carry it.
Is that what he's a ball of energy? Is this their off day? Are they taking the day off? They're like, oh, we got Alex in, so I can rest my voice. They're all drinking tea and shit.
Maybe. So we get to climate change.
Why?
Why not?
Okay.
And this is lowering the standards, not helping the third world, but lowering them and lowering us again. So no one can aspire to the big carbon footprint. Austerity is good. Humans are bad. Cows are evil. We've got to get rid of them. The cow farts are bad. Well, we fart too. And I said that years ago. I said, when they're done going after the cows, which they've started, Netherlands is getting rid of a bunch, Ireland, you name it, Sri Lanka, massive starvation riots in Sri Lanka. Notice what I said, next will be our breath is bad. Wall Street Journal, New York Times, USA Today, London Guardian, all 2 weeks ago said
London Guardian.
Breathing is bad for the earth. No,
yeah.
the gases we put off hold actually in the sun. They we're off gassing into space. We have
hold
to
in the sun. That's the point.
You can debate this all day, but they know that's how it works. So now they've officially said breathing is bad. Well, whales breathe, dolphins breathe, chipmunks breathe, birds breathe, lizards breathe, insects
breathe. Give five more examples.
So imagine the mania. Two men can have a baby. There are no longer Y and X chromosomes.
Three men can have a baby.
Bill Nye, the Science Guy, teaches that officially.
Of course.
your breath is evil.
Also human farts. They all say about human farting, not just cows.
Right.
You have to buy fart credits.
Yeah, Kurt, we heard.
Comedy.
I have fart offsets I buy for the year.
And I know this is all exhausting, folks, but that's why I'm so freaked out. I
can't believe you talked over comedy happening.
Yeah.
He has fart credits for the year. Good stuff. So I guess Jimmy and Kurt are on the side of climate change being a hoax, I guess. Because that's what Alex is telling them, and they're just laughing along.
What are we even doing now?
I don't know. So Alex's whole, they're saying breathing is bad, is based on a Daily Mail headline he skimmed, which is about an article published in the PLOS-1 journal titled, quote, Measurements of Methane and Nitrous Oxide in Human Breath and the Development of UK-Scale Emissions. The aim of the study was to get an idea of the scale of human breath emissions by assessing 104 volunteers. One part of it was looking at emissions, but another part was seeing if there was any difference between demographic groups or between people who had different dietary patterns. They found no differences between these groups that was significant. Ultimately, here's what their conclusion found. Quote, while emissions of CH4 and N2O account for only 0.05 and 0.1% of total emissions in the UK national greenhouse gas inventories, respectively, we would urge caution that the assumption that emissions from humans are negligible. We report only emissions in breath in this study, and flatus emissions are likely to increase these values significantly, though no literature characterizes these emissions for people in the UK. Assuming that livestock and other wild animals also exhale emissions of N2O, there may be a small but significant unaccounted for source of N2O emissions in the UK, which could account for more than 1% of national scale emissions. Naturally, there were a ton of publications that are desperate for clicks, like the Daily Mail, so they really zeroed in on that line, quote, we would urge caution in the assumption that emissions from humans are negligible, because that's the part that drives attention cycles for climate-denying fabulists like Alex, which in turn drives traffic to their sensational-ass articles. Even at their highest estimate, they're saying around 1% of national emissions may come from human exhalation, which isn't a significant thing. Human breathing is, first of all, necessary to life, whereas burning fossil fuels is not, strictly speaking, necessary. In theory, human CO2 production is almost exactly offset by the amount of CO2 we take in the form of the products of photosynthesis, like plants and animals that were fed with plants. There's a difference between CO2 emissions, which aren't necessarily bad, and excessive CO2 emissions, which are bad. Alex knows there's a difference between those two, but he uses sensationalized and inaccurate coverage of Daily Mail articles like this in order to blur those lines for the audience, because if they understood the difference, they'd probably see through his ridiculous farce of an argument. So I guess Jimmy and Kurt don't believe in climate change. It sounds like they're on board for trans people not existing. but pretty difficult to find any position that Jimmy has that's even remotely close to any kind of left politics that I recognize. Seems like he's kind of just a Trump guy who doesn't want to be called that.
Man. I mean, maybe he has some progressive thoughts on Rome's government that we looking over. You know,
could
like he's like, hey, I wish Rome had been more progressive. And so since they weren't, Trump. That makes sense.
Well, the thing that was great about Rome's government was that they weren't bogged down by this climate change rigmarole, red tape hoax.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate, because here's what I didn't see it coming. All right. I appreciate that the climate deniers are still hanging on.
Mm.
2003, 2005, you know, you got people bringing snowballs into the Congress.
That was cool.
And you go, wow, I bet this will be fine 20 years from now when we all are like, ha, 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 that guy's stupid. But now they're just like, we're going to bring a snowball everywhere. Mm. That's what they are. They just do that until we all die. I'm fine with that.
And then Fox News will have a little video of a snowball.
Yeah. They'll be like, remember these? Remember snowballs?
So
those are nice.
Alex continues with his climate stuff, and it leads a predictable place.
Sure.
I've known about this 40 years because I had family that told me about it from the inside. And now I'm just some guy up here trying to warn people. I'm not perfect. And I'm just
my grandpa
folks,
controls the weather.
The Jimmy's not the threat. Tucker Carlson's not the threat. We at least know we live here. We at least know that you can't have nuclear reactors, almost all of them leaking. While you cut off all the coal power.
Alex was paused and was a little confused there because he doesn't really know if he should be pro or anti-nuclear power.
I'm interested to know where they stand on that because I feel like they flip-flop an awful lot.
He is very against cutting off nuclear power plants in his book, but he didn't write that book.
Right.
So I'm not sure with Alex.
Well, that'll happen.
We know the ship is sinking, and they think they're going to sink it with the Great Reset, and then build back better their new system. And so, again, I'll plug it because they're trying to shut me down. I need the funds, and I appreciate you letting me do it. Plus, these are really good books. This went to number one. New York Times wouldn't put it in their bestseller, but it went to number one Wall Street Journal, USA Today list. This book has been the top of the charts. It's part two. It's twice as thick. You've got the Death Star plans, the Great Reset, and the War for the World. And then you've got the Great Awakening, Defeating the Globalists. This gets into it, and this lays out an alternate Team Humanity program. I was on with Elon Musk, again, a few weeks ago for 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah?
And he said, the globalists want to depopulate us. They want to destroy civilization. We may never be able to restart it once they cut it off. Fossil fuels aren't perfect. We need to phase them out, but they're a bridge. It'll take decades to do it. What they're doing now, I've looked at the numbers. This is Elon Musk. Will cause billions to starve to death, and that'll cause giant wars.
That sounds like you.
He's an idiot. And so are you.
We should call this Team Humanity versus Team Death Cult. And he said, I agree. Let's call it Team Humanity. Well, Team Humanity is in this book, and I hope people will go to InfoWarsStore.com and get it.
So I really hope this is just paid programming and Jimmy got money to do this interview because otherwise he looks like a fucking idiot getting steamrolled.
He better be getting paid for this.
Also, because it's fun, Alex's book never made it on any bestseller list. It was at the top of Amazon for a short period of time, but quickly dropped. As for his new book, Alex has been complaining on air that he can't even sell the first run that he ordered. So I imagine people just didn't want a book that was twice as thick. Like, if you're using the first one to level out your coffee table, a thicker book will just put it out of balance again. You know, it's not wise. Just because I'm petty, I went back and I looked at the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list, because that's what Alex brought up.
Yes.
They've recently stopped that feature, but Alex's Great Reset came out in August 20th, 2022.
Uh-huh.
So that's in a time period where the sales were covered.
You can look at it.
That week, Spelljammer Adventures in Space topped the hardcover nonfiction list, Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
But Tim Scott and Paul Manafort had titles in the top 10, so it's clear there's no political slant against conservatives.
Wait, they put, like, Dungeon Strategy Guide?
It's in the hardcover nonfiction section.
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
Bestseller lists do, and I think some might compartmentalize it off to list.
No,
but
I think
does.
I think that's cool, and I think it's deserved.
Sure.
That's what I think. Yeah.
So the next week, still no Alex.
Yeah.
But Jared Kushner's book, Breaking History, a White House Memoir, was number one in the hardcover nonfiction. So it looks like there's no squashing of Trump voices here.
Jared Kushner?
Yeah, he wrote a book.
Wow.
So then, on September 3rd, Alex finally pops in at number two behind Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died. Mm. The next week, September 10th, so Alex should have some kind of like really good pre-9/11 buzz going.
Sure.
But oops, he dropped down to number nine, then disappeared from the list altogether.
Eh.
He had that little blip because every audience member he had that was going to buy the book bought it at the same time, and it was good enough for number two. That's a kind of unbalanced path that really doesn't indicate that much global interest in a piece of media, which you can compare with something like McCurdy's book. By January 2023, she was still at number three, and her book had been released 2 weeks before Alex's. That was a genuine hit, whereas Alex's book was a desperate cash grab that he didn't even write, and the sales figures represent that. The second reason his book didn't make any of those lists isn't because of censorship, but probably because people bought the first one and they were underwhelmed with the second book.
Yeah, it's tough.
That book sucked. And Alex's information isn't that interesting when a coked out weirdo isn't yelling it at you. That really goes a long way towards making any of this palatable.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really does.
And you didn't even read his book.
I don't need to.
So you don't even know the difference.
Don't even
how
need
bad
to.
It is.
I read one sentence from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. So Alex, he has his book.
Sure.
He's showing it.
He's showing the book.
And Jimmy catches a little something.
Uh-oh.
Who is the co-author of that Great Awakening?
Uh-oh.
Kit Heckenlively, great guy. I mean, what happened is I recorded a bunch of stuff, gave him hundreds of articles and documents, really thousands. It was 800 pages long when I'd written it.
I said it.
Kit and their lawyers, he's a lawyer too, because, you know, I'm Alex Jones. They fact-checked everything, and there was one thing I put in the book.
Wait a second. We had to pause it for a second.
Yeah.
Alex is saying... They checked it over because I'm Alex Jones.
Yeah.
He's recognizing that no one believes his shit.
No one believes the thing I say.
Right.
They had to double check it because it's me.
Because I'm Alex Jones.
Even twice as right as I knew it always was.
That's interesting.
That they couldn't prove. It was theoretical, the story of you put fleas in a jar and they learn they can't jump out of it. And then once you take them out of the jar, they never jump higher than the jar. And I thought it was a good allegory, but I put it in the book like it was true. Turned out no one can prove it ever happened, but it's a good theoretical analogy. That was the one thing out of 800 pages that they couldn't prove. Everything else, they vetted everything. Of course, that got cut from the book.
Yeah.
And it got cut to 400 pages. But this is kind of stream of consciousness. Alex Jones, The Great Awakening. And this is what I actually say. A lot of people are going to watch this. Millions. I bet 10 million.
I got to pause it again. Because I didn't realize when I first was listening through this, he was saying that flea story is the one thing that got cut out of the book.
Yeah.
But also 400 pages got cut. What else was in there?
No, he said it was 400 pages.
No, he
total.
Said it was 800 pages when he gave it to Kent.
No shit.
That's what he said.
Oh, but that doesn't count. That was all printed out articles that Twitter
or memes. His just rambling audio notes that he sent him.
Yeah.
But still... That's 400 pages worth of stuff, and I guarantee there's other complete bullshit that was in there.
Yeah.
If you consider what kind of bullshit made it in, holy shit, the cutting room floor has got to be bad.
I don't want to be there.
No.
No.
People watch this the next week, and they're going to say, I never knew this guy talked about all this, because all they see, and they're going to do this, they're going to take me talking about Willie Nelson's spit, and that'll be the story, instead of... You know, Zuckerberg and the WEF say we're going to control you in the workplace, reading your thoughts. I mean, people should know that they're collectively building a digital prison. We're already in it.
Man, Alex can't finish a thought. I paused it a little bit, so it probably took away some of the ways that felt like this is just jumping from A to B to C to D. He's in mid-season form, and that, by that I mean he's high on something.
Yeah.
I have a strong suspicion that Jimmy asked Alex about Kent because he knows who Kent is, and Jimmy may have wanted to talk some COVID vaccine conspiracies. But instead, here we go, and Alex is off to the races. Because, you know, Kent Heckenlively
is
co-writer with Judy
Mikovits and the vaccine, and yeah.
So there's so much untrue stuff in Alex's book. The idea that a legal team vetted it is hilarious, number one.
Yeah.
And the idea that the only thing they couldn't stand behind was some dumb shit about a flea jumping, that's just amazing.
Ah.
You can find my book-length breakdown of Alex's stupid book and the things he's very wrong and lying about at alexjonesisanidiot.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because I'm petty, Kent wrote those books, many times slipping into the first person and saying things Alex would absolutely never say. It's a sloppy mess of a book, desperate for an author.
Yeah.
Also, because I'm very petty, Alex is a little bit off in his prediction for how many people would watch Jimmy's interview. As of this recording, a week after it was posted to Jimmy's YouTube page, it has 474,000 views. Not bad.
That's a lot more than I would hope.
But significantly lower than Alex's prediction and a ton of Jimmy's videos, like the 727,000 that his interview with Tucker got.
Yeah.
And because I'm insanely petty, Here is the oldest clip, or a clip from the oldest video on Jimmy Dore's channel, where he's making fun of somebody who is a climate denier.
Right now we're going to talk about, so you know how the "Oh My God" goes, I play something from a religious nut and then we make fun of it. This is from Brian Fisher. We've had him on the show before, Brian Fisher. He's the director of issues analysis of the Conservative Fundamentalist American Family Asshole Association. And on Thursday, he had an expert to come on and talk about fossil fuels. And here, let's have some fun. Here we go.
Let me just connect that to a biblical parable, the parable of the talents. The unfaithful steward, the wicked and lazy steward, as the master calls him, was the one who buried his talent in the ground and didn't do anything with it to multiply it. That's essentially what those who say we need to stop using oil, coal, and natural gas are telling us to do. Just leave those resources buried in the ground rather than pulling them out and multiplying their value for human benefit.
That's what they're saying, because when you pull them out of the ground for human benefit, it releases carbon into the air and causes climate change, and it's a real dirty way to create energy. That would be why.
The guy who's saying stuff.
Has he ever been funny?
But that guy was saying stuff that Alex believes.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah.
That's very similar, almost identical, actually, to what Alex believes.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've heard him say something almost identical.
And it's very close to the thing that Alex just said to him about how we need to off gas.
Yep.
And all of this stuff. He just didn't go as far as his, maybe would say in another place, which is God put it there for us to find, to terraform. What's it called?
Terraform.
In order to save the world by burning excess CO2. So anyway, maybe Alex's position is actually dumber than the one that is in this oldest clip on Jimmy's YouTube channel.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's dark.
Mm-hmm.
Time is a mean mother.
Yep. But it does prove you don't get funnier. So,
yeah. Sinbad's quote is always going to, you're funnier when you ride the bus. Mm. Sinbad's always going to be right about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Praise.
What? What was that?
I was me giving it up to Sinbad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Alex gives it up to Jimmy.
Okay.
And himself, by extension.
Sure.
Because they're both, like, right all the time. And they always provide sources for things.
Jimmy just showed everything he said. He showed you a clip or an article. And I try to do the same thing on my show. And maybe our interpretation's wrong. The point is, we're right about more than we're wrong. I would say I watch your show all the time. 95% accurate. I'm 95% accurate. And that's really a pretty accurate number, folks, because stuff's so wild, I wouldn't even need to think about making stuff up. I mean, here's a quick example. 3 years ago, Bill Gates files a patent for this nanotech that puts little microscopic spikes into your skin to track you and or deliver vaccines. They had articles saying it wasn't true and they weren't planning that, even though it was official. He came out last week and officially said they're launching the technology, but spun it like it's no big deal. And he says, you know, the thing is, we're going to put vaccines in your food so you basically will comply because you won't know any better.
Like a cow.
So again, this is
what?
Real.
Max Blumenthal told us about it.
So, yeah, he did. And he did. Bill Gates was talking about putting mRNA into our plants. And so you don't have to worry about vaccines. That's what he was saying. That's not what I'm saying.
So I'm glad these guys are so researched and they're so on the ball and right all the time. Like 95% is a very accurate number. It makes it really reassuring to listen to them because I know they're really good at this and they're right all the time and they're basing their points on facts. So I can just turn off my brain and critical thinking skills. I can just trust that they have it covered and really enjoy myself. What's this now? Bill Gates wants to put mRNA into the food. I better look into this one. It's a little too serious to take just on faith. Oh my God, I Googled it and I found this tweet that Bill Gates posted that says, quote, vaccines in our food supplies solves the problem of vaccine hesitancy. Oh my God, he does want to put mRNA in our food. That's what the image of this tweet says. This picture, it says, quote, Bill Gates vows to pump mRNA into food supply to force jab the unvaccinated. That's certainly written like a facsimile of an actual headline, so I probably should believe it. Oh wait, that's a fake tweet that someone photoshopped that's circulating on right-wing social media. Oh, man, this is just a link to an article on Robert Malone's insane Substack. Ah, shit. Looks like maybe Jimmy didn't have a source on this one. I'm sure he's like 95% right. This is just one of those few cases that he, you know, it's not. To the extent that any of this has any connection to reality, there are promising potentials in mRNA technology in terms of livestock vaccinations. There's no way that that could then vaccinate you by eating vaccinated animals, though. That's stupid. But then again, clearly Jimmy's pretty stupid. This happens all the time. Like a couple months back, Gates had invented, quote, an air vaccine to force vaccinate people. But guess what? That was bullshit, too.
Yeah.
But this information economy relies on a constant flow of scary and exciting claims to survive, so it will never stop. Also, Alex is making up that stuff about Bill Gates getting a patent for, like, nanotech spikes. This was a patent. It was numbered 060606, which is actually 666,
right,
which, of course, is the devil.
Yeah.
Alex's example for how everything is so crazy that he doesn't need to make things up is, in fact, a made-up thing.
Yeah.
Which is poetry.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appropriamity.
I am amazed. I'm amazed that, like, despite the fact that they know they don't know anything about science. Mm. Like, I know I don't know anything about science. I'm not acting like, oh, they're putting mRNA right in the... I don't know fundamentally what that means. Like, they're putting mRNA in a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot explain to me what that means in a way that will make it mean something.
Right.
Like, mRNA is what? Are you talking about the type of RNA? But, are you talking about a vaccine? What vaccine? What chemicals?
So
is a chemical going to then interact? Does it give me antibodies? Does it not give me antibodies? Is it ingestible? Is it in through the skin? Like, none of what you say means anything.
Number one, it's tasty. Number two?
Now we're talking.
So in their world, they are of the belief that these cows or animals can be given some sort of an mRNA thing that will alter their DNA.
Right.
And then make it so when you eat them, it will also alter your DNA.
Right.
It's all a load of shit. I get what you're saying, though. Like, I also don't understand science on the deep level that a scientist does.
Right.
And I understand that. And typically, a lot of my understanding about these things has to do with, you made a claim, I'm going to follow it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go wherever you're pointing to,
right,
and see what the shit is there.
Right.
And I can say fairly confidently that I have no faith in their understanding of anything.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
See,
at the moment.
But for me, that's where I get so mad at them, all right? Is because if you're going to invent science and then use it dumbly, that bums me out, right? Okay, so if you're saying that they can give mRNA to a cow, which will alter its DNA,
and Bill Gates wants to do this,
and then us eating that cow will alter our DNA.
Yep.
All right, now, I don't give a fuck about vaccines at that point. You have introduced the power to feed a cow something that will alter its DNA, and then I will have my DNA altered. You have just entered into a realm of, I should be able to glow now. Yeah, right now, I want to glow.
It is a bit magical.
If I don't glow, fuck you.
Put that on your pipe and smoke it.
That is my argument for vaccines.
Speaking of science,
I can't glow.
I just saw a clip the other day of Brett Weinstein, the professor who got mad at the, like, no white people on campus day thing.
Sure.
And then became a right-wing celebrity.
Yeah.
He, he's a big COVID vaccine opponent now.
Well, I mean, yeah. You fall into a gig like that.
He was just on Tucker. And he was saying 17 million people have been killed by the COVID vaccine. 17 million. Remarkable.
That really should, like, if you're a scientist, when you say that, you should get to mug to the camera. Like, there should be a moment where you turn and you're like, 17 million, aren't I a stinker?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, you're foolish. You know you're foolish.
You kind of have to.
You know.
Kind of have to know that.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have this next clip goes into the anti-vax, so it's appropriate, I guess.
Sure.
I'm going to give a trigger warning in advance of this clip, because Alex yells the word rape repeatedly.
Great.
And it's unpleasant, and I don't care for it much.
Nope.
But the underlying point that he's making is something that's worth talking about.
Gotcha.
I was on Joe Rogan a few years ago, and I said, the majority of polio is caused by the polio vaccine. And Joe said, Alex, I'm fact checking that right now. That's not, you know, I can't believe it. Pulls up AP Reuters headline. Again, I'm not saying rape is good of children. It's terrible. It's horrible. We fight it all the time. But if I was a child, I would rather be raped than be given polio and paralyzed for life or killed. So They're raping people with stuff that's killing them. So this is rape. And the UN treaty to take over our bodies and our medical system is rape. And systems to scan our brains at the office is invasion of privacy and rape. If your boss wanted to stick their finger up your butt, he would go to jail. He would be sued. But if they want to stick their fingers in your brain, it's okay.
Well, I think I have to say that the polio vaccine, Kurt, is safe and effective. And
all vaccines are, especially the COVID vaccine, slows the spread.
And it certainly does slow the spread.
Look at that spread slowing.
Look at it. And
works. No one search engine. Majority of new polio cases caused by vaccine. It's actually true. But you're right. You can't even say stuff that's true because we're not a Dr. Fauci.
Oh, man. So I guess Jimmy and Kurt are also totally anti-vax.
Are we doing this?
I didn't realize that. Right. I thought it was they just had some kind of like dumb COVID tyranny kind of thing. But I guess Jimmy is just gobbling this bullshit up and signing off on Alex's really dangerous and offensive rant. That's really bad. So Alex is so goddamn full of shit. Leaving aside the rank flippancy about rape, there's a little piece of information that he's conveniently not saying about the polio vaccine. In 1988, there were approximately 350,000 wild cases just that year in 125 countries. Because of the vaccine's wide availability, there were 6 reported cases of wild cases in 2021.
Yeah.
There are only 2 countries in the world where there's still wild polio that's not been eradicated, which are Pakistan and Afghanistan, and even their cases are super uncommon, thanks to vaccination programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex knows that. He knows that the polio vaccination campaign is one of the greatest achievements of modern medicine, and he knows that this most cases are caused by the vaccine is a fraudulent talking point that he uses to attack vaccination. He knows that the words most cases are caused by vaccines is true, but he also knows damn well that he's lying by omitting the surrounding context, which he omits because it illustrates how wrong his overall point is. Also, in these cases where the vaccine is leading to a case of polio, it's often not the person who got vaccinated that is getting polio. The live weakened virus version of the vaccine can, in some cases, lead to people spreading that weakened virus. In well-vaccinated communities, this isn't a problem. However, to quote the Polio Eradication Project, quote, in communities with low immunization rates, as the virus spreads from one unvaccinated child to another over a long period of time, often over the course of 12 to 18 months, it can mutate and take on a form that can cause paralysis, just like the wild poliovirus. This mutated poliovirus can then spread in communities, leading to circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus. This is not difficult to understand, which is why Alex lies about it the way he does.
Yeah.
Alex attacks the polio vaccine not because it's giving tons of people polio, but because it was so effective at protecting people from polio, particularly the people Alex would rather see dead, like folks in the developing world.
Yeah.
I understand where Alex is coming from, and his lie is really transparent, but what the hell do Jimmy and Kurt think? Do they really think the polio vaccine is bad because in 2020 there were 959 reported cases of vaccine-derived polio in the whole world? I find it difficult to really believe they don't understand this dynamic, so there's really only 2 options. The first is that they are fully committed to this anti-vax propaganda world, and they're comfortable lying about this stuff the same way Alex is. The second is that they're the types of people who are so irresponsible with information that they can hear someone say most polio cases are caused by the vaccine and have their mind blown to the point where they don't need any further context or information to make up their mind.
Yeah.
Either way, this show is fucking dumb. And it's dumb in ways that I didn't even realize. Like, I thought Jimmy was kind of like, it seemed weird to me the ways that he had presented himself as, you know, kind of this left-leaning guy, and then, oh, what's this, he's showing up at like anti-mask rallies.
I thought,
oh,
he was,
what's this, he's really mad at the schools. What's this, he's showing up on Tucker. You know, I thought there was some of this stuff that he was appealing to a different audience, and it seemed like, I understand the move, I got it. And
sure,
I'm listening to this, and he just seems to be signing off on, like,
hey, really?
Some of the worst things that Alex is signing off on. You know, it's beyond what I thought the situation was. He seems like he's worse than I thought.
Well, it makes me believe that there's a language that we're not hearing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it makes me believe that something's going on that these people are listening to that we're not. Because I just can't get inside the head of a person who is responding to what Alex says. Like, I genuinely feel
Alex may be speaking French. I think the thing that they're hearing that we're not is ka-ching.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. That's it. I mean, yeah, but even if that's what you're hearing, how do you respond to what Alex says like this? With the words you're, you know?
I don't know.
Like, what do you, like, I want to know what they're actually, what sounds hit their ears and turn into words, because I don't know.
I imagine that Jimmy sees a broadening of his audience when he's doing like anti-vax content, and that leads him to pursue more of that. I wouldn't be too surprised by that. I just didn't realize it was this much.
Yeah.
Like, in this interview, to the extent that there is information about it, I'm not sure what his landing point is on it, but he's turned his position on immigration.
Yep.
He seems to be spouting anti-Semitic Rothschild conspiracies.
Full on
anti-vax.
No vaccines, period.
Climate change, denialism at least. Tepid denialism, not pushing back on anything Alex is saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's much further down this road than I had imagined, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, and it's so strange with stuff that it seems like you simply can't go backwards on.
Mm.
You know, like if you were alive and politically active and aware when an idiot brought a snowball into Congress, and then now, you can't be like, yeah, these people think, you can't do that. You just can't.
Right.
You know, you just can't.
But then again,
you can lie about it, and if you lie about it, you should have to be in like a cordoned off area, like a free speech zone, if you will, and that should be on the moon.
I mean, the uncomfortable reality is maybe we have to deal with the possibility that he was lying before.
Eh.
I mean, he was the person who spit in Alex's face.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's...
Maybe this is more to where he... I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the man.
Maybe it's just people who do this... Okay. People like Jimmy, like Alex, people who do the stuff... Just are they're minors? They go to where the gold is.
Oh, I thought you meant they're underage.
No. They go to where gold is. You know, mm-hmm. They just follow the money. Mm-hmm. That's it. So,
and I think a lot of people are that way.
Yeah,
and
we're bad minors. I think that's what we're really dealing with.
I never aspired to be a minor.
Yeah, I know.
And maybe that's a mistake.
The miners are doing all right now.
So Alex, you brought up Fauci at the end there.
Sure.
A little riffing on Fauci.
Little Fauci.
Dr. Fauci. Did you see the clip of him that resurfaced where he said, we're going to get past all the BS? He said, he spelled it out. He said, we're going to get past the BS by locking people down. And that'll teach them, and then they'll drop the BS and take the shot. It's all coercion, people. And that's called bullying.
So, I mean, I can't say anything that contradicts the FDA, the CDC, or the WHO.
And that's normal in a democracy,
and that's normal in a democracy.
I look down on China, frankly, because they don't have freedom.
Man, these guys are having fun making money saying all the things they're pretending they're not allowed to say. Ha ha. Anyway, Alex's thing about Fauci isn't really accurate. So in an interview he did with MSNBC, he said, quote, you use lockdowns to get people vaccinated so that when you open up, you won't have a huge surge of infections because you're dealing with an immunologically naive population to the virus because they've not really been exposed because of the lockdown.
Oh, you're calling us stupid, aren't you?
There's a difference between this and what Alex is claiming, yeah. But also it's important to recognize that he was answering a direct question from Andrea Mitchell, who said, quote, how concerning is the outbreak in China? It was part of a much longer answer that was critical of China's zero COVID lockdown strategy, essentially the opposite of what Alex is saying when it's actually in its proper context.
Right.
But it looks good. You know, it's enough. He is saying that you use lockdowns to get people vaccinated.
Yeah.
Boom. Bada bing. What do you got? Fauci.
You know what I find so fascinating? What I find so fascinating is that right now we're in the second highest surge of COVID cases, reported COVID cases. And the government, as far as I can tell, is behaving exactly how Alex and them would want the government to behave, right?
Like, yeah, but that's why you attack more.
No, but that's what I find interesting about that is that no, but like they're not going, oh, well, now is the time when we should be more aware of health. Like
they're not being defiant in the way that you would expect if it's just always a knee jerk opposition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because it's a push further kind of opposition. It's an opposition in a different direction.
It's like, well, this time we're doing nothing like you asked us to, and you're still mad?
And this doing nothing is actually secretly a plan to lock us back up again.
Yeah, that's, at that point, yeah. Yeah, man, where there's no escape. Do nothing, do something, doesn't matter.
It is true. Well, yeah, I mean, I think so much of the context does surround the fact that it's been years. You know, I think that I don't know. I don't know if the government did nothing to begin with. You know,
sure.
I don't know if Alex's knee-jerk reaction would be, hey, everyone needs to take this very seriously.
Right.
It was for a minute, but I don't know if that would have been sustained.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's
there's no going back to it now, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's been years. And
what I'm listening to is maybe, like, for me, now is when the government really focusing on COVID and vaccines and all that stuff would go a long way towards protecting against the next anti-vaxxer kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Now is when you have to do the grunt work, when people aren't paying attention, when everybody's not panicking all the time.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
And it is an unfortunate reality, though, that these people have cemented their views and the COVID vaccine is the clot shot and all this stuff. And they're just making up excuses to cover up for how everyone's dying because of the shot. Here, listen to this.
The mRNA shot works perfectly.
Yes.
It actually cures myocarditis.
There might be side effects.
It's climate change doing it.
But they are rare. And,
what?
It will keep you from getting seriously ill, hospitalized, or death.
Did you hear about holiday heart? All the articles that everybody's suddenly having heart attacks? It's quite normal?
No, holiday heart?
It's probably holiday from the
heart.
Holidays.
That's what the Grinch got at the end.
It's he called from the holiday heart.
Comedy's happening.
I just have to show you the reach of Bill Gates, who funds the WHO, and I'm on YouTube and Google, and I'm not allowed to contradict them, which means I'm not allowed to contradict Bill Gates, who's just a simple farmer.
Hey, Bill Gates is my doctor. I love the fact that he used to sell crappy software and got busted for running a monopoly and was loading stuff onto it to control it. I mean, no, I want him to be in charge of my life. I love Bill Gates.
So the term holiday heart was coined in 1978 to describe incidents of heart attacks that people had around the holidays that were directly related to heavy drinking. Alex is pretending this is a new thing that's meant to cover up COVID vaccine deaths because he's a fucking idiot. But these dudes, man, they are having a blast. You're asking, like, where their comedic riffing chops are gonna be? It's when the Bill Gates stuff starts.
I find sarcasm to be best used when, like, very short bursts. Because if you're trying to be sarcastic for a long sentence, you're just complaining. You're not even being sarcastic. Yeah. You're just complaining that you don't like things.
And to be fair, I'll even point the finger back at myself earlier when I did that whole thing about Bill Gates wanting to put mRNA in our food, and I pretended to be
that was a sustained
character.
It was
even a little bit too long, maybe.
Sure, but I mean, the problem is, in that situation, you're adopting a character and playing that character as a thing.
The character was inconsistent, though, at best.
That is fair. If we want to have a debriefing on this.
I didn't do a Bible on the character. I didn't know who this person was.
Right. It's the homework. The homework is the real issue.
At best, I knew it was a Jimmy Dore listener. That was as far as it went. So look.
Yeah.
Here's where my notes end.
Because this is where we couldn't listen anymore.
Shit gets crazy.
Okay.
No, shit gets crazy for a while, and then I said, fuck you.
Okay.
But there's still a ways to go.
Oh, my God.
So
okay.
My notes ended because I don't really care about taking this seriously.
Yeah. We're past that.
There is the stuff about, like, BlackRock, and, you know, there are things that are real.
Yeah.
And then there's this.
Okay.
And so this clip's a little bit long, and it needed to be, because it begins with Jimmy's playing a clip of Tucker, and... strap it the fuck in.
All right.
Because...
So wait. So now on this show, mm-hmm. where it's not Alex's show, but we're listening to Alex.
Uh-huh.
It's not Tucker's show, but we're listening to Tucker.
Yeah.
It is Jimmy Dore's show, but I still have to fucking hear Kurt Metzger. I'm furious about this cast.
Yeah. It's not good. This ain't the dream team. But this is about aliens.
Oh, okay.
So they are trying to hide it still. That's a fact. My own view is that these are not aliens. There's no evidence that they've come from somewhere else. We would probably know. We've got a lot of technology that's watching what comes in and out of the atmosphere, and there's no evidence of that. I think they've been here forever. This is my view. Again,
uh-oh.
It can be proven. But
center of the earth?
For a lot of conversations.
Center of the earth.
I think it's likely that the U.S. government has had contact with these. direct contact and, you know, over a period of years. I find that really disturbing because I, you know, and a bunch of other things that are highly distressing that I can't prove. And so I'm certainly not going to throw them out there, but I'll tell you this. I've talked to a lot of people about this, not because I've never been interested in UFOs until like 5 years ago. And I was like, wait, this is real. What is this? Why aren't we talking about this? I'm just like coming at it from a totally idiotic, I don't know anything, curious position, which is my normal posture on everything.
Yeah, that's usually
and
you.
So I've talked to a lot of people, and my view is that there, you know, this is my opinion, that there are things about this that are really disturbing. And while I hate any kind of government secrecy, and if I could prove any of this, I would say it immediately, consequences be damned, I do sort of understand why they don't want to let this stuff out. It's not about, oh, we've got fragments of one of these crafts at a Lockheed, you know, facility in California, and we have biologics from the craft. You know, everyone knows that that's likely true. Well, it's certainly true that they have the, you know, pieces of this stuff.
Yep.
But I think it's likely that it's darker than that, and that the U.S. government is, I say the U.S. government, people in the U.S. government, not the U.S. government, but,
good
you know,
save.
There are parts, it's the largest human organization in history, parts of it, you know, have knowledge that is very, very disturbing. And I personally strongly think that there's a spiritual component to this that I don't understand and will not pretend to understand, but I think it's very clear that there's a spiritual component to this. That's one of the reasons the Vatican, and I'm not Catholic, but has been involved in this for over 100 years as an observatory, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's pretty obvious that these are not men from Mars. That I think that was a psyop, because I think the truth is a little bit wilder and has deeper implications just than that.
So what do you think he's talking about there?
Shut up.
I have to be really careful
shut
here.
Shut up.
Because, you know, I'm friends with Tucker. I hang out with his son. You know, go hunting with him and shooting and go visit him and things like that.
When Alex starts like that, you know that he's probably going to say whatever he's not supposed to say.
Yeah.
In fact, I invited him to come out to Florida sometime next month, and I just love Tucker, love to death. He thought I was a psychopath 15 years ago for saying 9/11 was an inside job in Building 7. And then his children, who were now in college and stuff, and out of college, started bringing him stuff and saying, no, Dad, this guy's, you know, pretty good. We like him. So he came to visit me 11, 12 years ago and kind of halfway apologized. He said, I thought you were a sociopath and just saying all this stuff, to, you know, for ratings, but I found out you're a really good guy.
And I am a sociopath saying stuff for ratings.
Then Tucker really listens to me a lot now, and it's also other people. And from my research of the globalists and what they're really doing in DMT research in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and that also goes to a connection to a family friend who was the deputy head of a major psychedelic research group in San Francisco.
Was it Wavy Gravy?
When I first heard this, I was about 7 years old on a trip in the back of my mom's Volkswagen Beetle with her and her friend.
Oh, it was a she. Never mind.
To a week-long trip with the girls to Arkansas.
Additional details.
Where they went on a tourist trip, checking out all the cool sights there. Really beautiful there. And I'm sitting in the back with my Etch-a-Sketch and comic books, listening
to this lady.
It's
totally a true story. All these details really reinforce
talk about how they're basically astronauts, and they put them on DMT drips. This is before anybody was talking about DMT, and they go in and they model this veil or the other dimensions that are there, and they then communicate with these entities, and they come back and then write notes about it. And then I did later research once I grew up and knew about this. They also have volunteers where they actually stop the heart and kill people for a couple minutes so that they can have these out-of-body experiences. Because what it is third-dimensionally, they call it spiritual. That's what the ancients called it. What the globalists actually believe, what the evidence is there's 12 dimensions we know about just in this verse. Of course, there's multiverses.
Ooh. Okay, so we got them. Okay. Oof. So this is I'm a little bit distracted for a couple of reasons.
Yeah,
I got bored of Alex.
Yeah, well that'll happen.
So I'm thrilled to report that Wavy Gravy is still alive.
Okay, I was wondering.
Married to the same woman since 1965.
Really?
Yes, almost 60 years of blissful matrimony.
Well, good for them.
Here's the other thing I learned.
What was that?
Their last name is Romney. Maybe related. You think they're part of the Romney family?
If they are, that
is perhaps the final nail in the coffin of there aren't enough guys.
According to Wikipedia, which I'm not sure I'm going to fully believe, but I'll go ahead for now and believe.
Sure.
They have a son named Howdy Do Good Gravy Tomahawk Truck Stop Romney.
All right.
It may or may not be the case. Anyway, Tucker's talking about demons.
Sure. I've decided, you know, I thought for a long time that I was anti-borders. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no borders, no countries, no nothing. And I've realized that we do need borders. Mm. But not organized around, like, region. Organized around century, okay? Mm. So, like, this region, there will be people who still live in 1904.
Right.
You know? So
you're,
like,
you're talking about, like, the places where they have the role-playing. Like, let's just... Because it's a good start. Let's go ahead and use that.
Yeah. Let's start there, right? So, Tucker, okay, there's a spiritual component. Hundreds of years... Fine. 1900s. Mm-hmm. That's where you live.
Yeah.
I get to live in the present. Mm-hmm. I like the present.
Demonic, though, man.
Yeah, and I'm going to stay there.
Yeah, but there's...
don't have to live in the present with me.
Yeah, but
you can live in 1904.
Nah, but your very existence on the border...
No, that's why we... Again, I'm all about domes. My organizational strategy is all dome-based.
Mm.
Once you get in the dome, you're not getting out of the dome.
So Tucker's talking demons.
Yeah.
And Alex's answer is very much trying to, like, insist that he has something confidential that Tucker has told him and be like, I'm not going to talk about this. And then just starts rambling about DMT research and familial relations of his that are deeply entwined with the 12 dimensions of our single part of the multiverse.
Yeah, I mean, see, I was all fine up until we got to the multiverse. Then you're just...
Well, that's quite a twist at the end, though.
You're negating your premise. Mm. You're not twisting. You're just invalidating.
So, but that's there's 12 dimensions in
pointless.
Each dimension of the verse.
No need them.
No?
Nope. Don't need it. Cut it out. Condense.
To?
All right? Focus.
To what?
To...
You can have dimensions or a multiverse.
There is dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Vatican. Connected to the dimensions, higher and lower. That's what you got. You got basic. You got your basic three-tiered system, right?
And the Vatican is like the hinge point.
Exactly. You got your Inferno, Purgatorio, Paradiso. You got the traditional structure.
Now we're back to comedy.
Now you got
to
get
That's how it's done. That's good.
Yeah, Metzger.
Oh, boy. So here's a situation
What were we doing?
Who cares?
Do we have a show?
Here's what we need to recognize.
Yes.
More and more people are seeing ghosts. Okay?
I'm sorry. I'm going to need a lot more on that. More and more people are seeing ghosts. I feel like we've seen so many fucking ghosts.
You're going to get plenty on it.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Where I started to get a sense of what Alex is... definitely not saying about Tucker.
Okay.
The ancients would take a bunch of drugs and get in the middle of a circle. They thought it protected them. Solomon, the Egyptians, all of it. And a genie or a demon would appear. And they usually wanted the sacrifice of blood to give you knowledge. And you can read this in the
Or to give you three wishes.
In black magic books that are, you know, thousands of years old. Translated
thousands of year old black magic books.
That's where all this comes from, with psychedelics and, you know, and the ancients and then all the other cultures taking these drugs. Is that they believe they're talking to the gods and the servants of the gods. But the rule is the higher level angels or good guys don't interfere in the third dimensional manifestation of our bodies. That is a dimensional manifestation or signature of something much larger. So this is kind of the tether of what we are and a signature or footprint that's interdimensionally there. It's way more complex than that, but
sure.
No.
Basically, that's where these people have these experiences. That's where people that have never taken drugs, have no mental illness in their family, will walk into their bedroom, and a poltergeist will appear or won't, and will throw you up onto the ceiling.
Holy shit.
Or will put giant bloody scratch marks across your chest. And so more and more people are having this experience, and so they didn't believe in God, they didn't believe in aliens, till... they get demonically attacked. And I'm not going to say who this has happened to, but let's just say it's happening to a lot of people, and they're suddenly discovering all this and trying to then say, what did this to me? I'm not drinking. I'm not on drugs. And I just got, it's usually when you're alone, and these things will attack you. And so that's really what's going on. And so
So Tucker got attacked by a demon?
I believe.
That's what I'm picking up.
That whilst in his main studio.
Mm-hmm. Where he said he drinks.
Tucker was accosted by a poltergeist.
There could have been, do you think he was thrown up on the ceiling?
I don't know. I don't know if it appeared or did not appear, because apparently that is, both are available.
So now here's where things get real weird.
Yes.
I was laughing along with this.
Sure.
This is silly.
Well, I mean.
But then, look at this.
Holy shit, there's scratches across your chest!
And I saw that, and I was like, what the fuck? That's, and then I realized I have a cat.
You do have a cat. There is that.
Yeah. So probably not a demon.
Could not be a demon.
Yeah.
Could be a cat.
Yep. So Tucker got attacked by a demon, and that's why he's acting weird.
I don't understand the specificity of the scratch marks on the chest, because that is so specific.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already got, we don't need that detail. We've already got, oh, they might appear or not, and you'll be on the roof.
Yeah.
Scratches on the chest seems almost like a downgrade, and yet is so specific, it feels important.
Well, here's the thing that I would look at it as.
Yeah.
So you have someone who's a gunslinger.
Sure.
And you got someone who's a knife fighter.
All right. Which one brought the correct instrument to the
fight? They're not fighting each other.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
What I'm saying is the things that they would leave behind if they attacked you would be different.
Oh, that's true.
So maybe there are certain poltergeists that like to scratch. They have claws.
Okay.
Certain poltergeists have telekinesis
and
can put you on the ceiling.
It's
the difference between a knife fighter and a gunslinger.
Now we've entered it. See, this is where we get into trouble again. Mm-hmm. I always like the, okay, if that's true, what else is true question?
Sure. Well, it's like with poltergeists. They are like action role-playing games.
Sure.
There's different classes.
Sure. Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay.
Each one has a dimension.
Now, you are a cowboy gunslinger. You die in the Old West.
Yeah.
Are you forever a gunslinger poltergeist, or can you learn a new skill?
Well, it depends on if you have enough in-game currency to respec.
That is a good point.
Yeah. Because
you got to do fetch quests pretty regularly.
Yeah, you've got to grind to get the XP in order to become a knife guy.
Unless you want to put in your real money, your real ghost money.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that.
But you could just start.
Free to poltergeist.
You could just start trying to learn a secondary skill, but it won't be as good.
You can't dual class.
No.
Not after.
Not if you're a ghost.
You can add Lich, but that's already really kind of happened.
So yeah, Tucker got attacked by a demon. We have to keep coming back to this because that is clearly what Alex is saying.
1904 is the year that Tucker gets to live in.
So look. A lot of people take DMT, and they have these visions,
sure.
Like the astronauts that were on DMT drips.
Sure.
But Alex doesn't need that shit.
No.
You know why?
Drugs?
He has a freakishly large neck.
Oh, well, that'll
What's
help.
What's happening is we're
can't breathe?
Teeming with energy, teeming with consciousnesses, but we're dialed down because you couldn't have a wife or a husband and go plant corn in the field and, you know, do your work if you could see all the different things interdimensionally that are there. And so... I naturally have a 21-inch neck and have really bad sleep apnea since I was a kid because I guess you almost call it a Burt defect. I mean, my head is huge and my neck's huge for my body. But the point is that I've had two sleep studies done. I get down to 63% oxygen, and there's only at night. That causes brain damage long term. But there's only one thing
to
in
whom?
Studies that will bring you into
not
the
him
EMT
the rest
experience.
Of us.
And that's low oxygen dreams. Well, I have low oxygen dreams. So since I was a small child, especially when I grew up and got bigger, I don't dream in REM sleep the last 2 hours like most people. I dream from the time I go to bed till the time I wake up 8 hours later. And a lot of it is a brain function, going over the data, creating scenarios for the brain.
Nicotine also, Alex. Nicotine, when I would fly on planes...
That is the wrongest response to that.
Nicotine patch on, and nicotine will make you dream very vividly.
Absolutely, because it constricts the blood vessels and does a bunch of other stuff. So yes, and so I'm not trying to get mumbo jumbo. I don't go to the churches and believe that stuff. I know what I objectively know. I know the government's studying it, and I told Tucker some private stuff. He told me some private stuff. He asked me on his show to go ahead and say it. And I said, I'm not going to tell those stories, Tucker, because he said, why not? Tell it right now during a break. He was, we were taking a piss. And I said, Tucker, why don't you tell your stories? He said, touche.
Near devastating speed bump by Metzger, expertly avoided by Alex, just sort of shuffling it off to the side and moving along. Alex probably is... Maybe that conversation was real with Tucker. The I'll share mine if you share yours, touche.
Yeah, it could be.
But Alex's motivation in not getting into that stuff is not because Tucker didn't.
No.
It's because he had a wider audience that he didn't want to look at him as nuts.
Yeah, he's saying that stuff real fine.
Yeah, here. Yeah, because there is a Joe Rogan adjacency to the audience that Alex knows that a Kurt Metzger and Jimmy Dore have, where he wants to have kind of like that psycho knot thing going
edgelord,
on.
Yeah,
whereas, you know, Tucker, for whatever, you know,
still mainstreaming it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether or not that accurately depicts Tucker's audience, that is the aesthetic, and that's what you want to play to.
I feel like what we just heard was, imagine a guy spent 25 years building a career around the idea that every night someone was in his house moving stuff around.
Yeah.
And then about an hour ago, he's like, yeah, there's a guy. He's in my house every night, moves stuff around. And then last night, found out I was a sleepwalker. Crazy. Anyways, this guy, I'm going to catch him next time. Uh-huh. You know, and it's like,
and
wait.
And I've surreptitiously built my worldview around what I think this guy is up to.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Did you just explain everything that you have ever said in 2 seconds with a very simple and plausible and, in fact, the actual answer?
No. Because everybody else having, like, low oxygen, hallucinatory
you
dreams.
You have 100% explained every single thing that you have ever said to me.
Everybody else would have nonsense hallucination dreams.
Right.
I see the future.
Oh, my God. That made me so mad. I don't know if I can I can't wrap my mind around the idea that he's told people in his real life that stuff.
Yeah, probably.
They've been to doctors, and the doctors have been like, you understand this is all why.
Yeah.
You understand all of this. It's right here. It's right here.
Yeah. The problem is that you have delusions and you think they're real.
Yeah.
Now, here's the added layer that you have to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
He's telling this to Jimmy and Kurt.
Yep.
And they're just like, oh, man, that's heavy. That's deep stuff, man.
I mean, I genuinely feel this is about as insane as a human being can feel.
I think you can see why I stopped taking notes.
Yep, yep. No, I truly feel crazy. Like, it does feel like I've been gaslit on a level of, like, it feels like I'm a ghost. It feels like I'm a ghost, right? You know, like, these people are all having a conversation, and I'm just sitting there screaming in their ear, you know this!
Well,
you know!
That is kind of what our show is.
It is like
It's
that.
A little ghost.
It is a little ghosty.
Poltergeist.
I will say that. Poltergeist.
So Tucker saw a demon.
When Tucker tells his stories, I'll tell mine. And I'm giving you a little bit of a hint here, and I've not broken confidence or anything here.
I think you have.
I'm just
Who
saying
cares?
That
Tucker
that
doesn't watch Jimmy Dore.
Are having these experiences. I mean, you might be driving down the road, and you're not on drugs, and it's 8 a.m. in the morning, and you have no history of mental illness. You've never seen an hallucination, both optical or olfactory. And
smell?
You look over in your seat, and there is a demon sitting right there in the seat saying, I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to kill
you. I mean, that is going on. And so 95% of this interview has been stuff we can prove. They're going to control our minds. They're going to do all this. They're going to make us eat bugs. And so they're all
–
here's the best info I have. They didn't meet the aliens at Roswell. They didn't go and
– The aliens landed on us.
The aliens, you know, at Hangar Area 51. What they're doing is they're getting interdimensional information from lower level beings that are older than us or been around.
I'm gonna kill you.
The transistor,
Bye.
All of this
also,
just,
here's
just
how radios
came
work.
Into being. And it's not coming in crash spacecrafts. That's what they're giving them. But they'll literally tell the government when they're in these DMT operations, okay, bring in 10 kids and cut their heads off for me.
Give me 10
and
kids.
And say, well, they want you to do evil things. They like
I'll
it.
Teach
they
you
like
about
the pain.
Microchips.
Or is it just to see if we'll do what they tell them? And then they go, okay, open your mind. I'm giving you a design for something. And then they're giving us a design to build
to
a system to enslave us. It's kind of like the movie, cheesy 1990 sci-fi movie, Species, where they got a radio telescope aimed at 50 light years away or whatever it was, and they get sent a DNA sequence from aliens, and they go, let's inject this into a female egg and see what happens.
It is almost kind of exactly like the movies.
It is almost kind of exactly like movies that he saw.
I 100% forgot the plot of Species.
Me too.
because I saw it at a like basketball team sleepover, or maybe it wasn't even a sleepover. I'm not entirely sure.
Did your basketball team have sleepover?
I think it might have not been a sleepover, but like a pizza party kind of
thing. Right. That makes way more sense. Yeah.
And it was. I think it was a sleepover because of what I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
I was not allowed to watch R-rated movies.
Sure.
And so I went to a bedroom and like censored it myself.
Oh, dear.
I refused to watch it because I wasn't allowed. And so I went into a bedroom. That's why I probably thought it was a sleepover.
I want to protect you as a child more.
I was fine not seeing Natasha Henstridge nude. That's all right.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
But yeah, I forgot that was the plot of the movie, but apparently that's what the aliens or the demons are doing.
That is the plot. And then she could jump really high. Wasn't that the...
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Something like that.
So, yet some more alien talk here.
Sure.
You ready?
No, I'm not.
And so basically, the aliens don't come in flying saucers from Mars. They don't come up out of the, you know, the Pacific, you know, rim, you know, from the hollow Earth.
Like in
they
that movie?
Come through the interdimensional...
Or in that other movie?
Vortex and then communicate.
Oh, like in that other movie.
That is operating in the 3rd, 4th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and even 11th and 12th dimensions.
Whoa.
And so the invasion, ancients would call it spiritual, but it's not spiritual. In every culture, I mean, they got the Dugong tribe and, you know, tribes in Africa that said up there in the sky is this pole star, multi star, and it's got 7 planets around it, and they came from this one. And no telescope.
That's the movie Prometheus.
Until like 70 years ago, could even see it.
That's the movie Prometheus. I remember that scene.
The Africans said that was, and they say aliens came from here and taught us about all this stuff. But they also told us about these other interdimensional things that are here to destroy us. And see, I don't know, but all I know, and then you see Prometheus, the movie.
Aha! Gotcha!
Sirius and all
I get 5 points.
And tell you the story. None of the globalists really believe that some salts in the ocean turn into a cell, turn into a sponge, turn into a fish, crawled out on the land, crawled back in.
So we're anti-all evolution, too?
Designs that have been made before.
Well, of course Alex is.
Right, now, that makes sense.
Yeah, but yeah, Jimmy's not pushing back at all. You dumb fuck. You believe in evolution? It was Prometheus. It was the movie Prometheus.
I had not expected the movie Prometheus to be on the...
You didn't expect to be that quickly right?
I really didn't. I thought it would take a little longer.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe there would be another movie starring Matt Damon that they would bring up.
Maybe.
Sooner or later.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-mm.
Oh, boy.
This is good stuff.
I think we should replace the right-wing conspiracy media with just a loop of the movie Event Horizon, right?
Who the fuck not?
Like, we could just get rid of all of them and then just have a captive quarter of the American population just always watching Event Horizon on a loop. And it would be about the same. In terms of belief structure.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a push.
Yeah.
So Alex, he does think he's on Dime Store Rogan.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to blow some minds here.
It's feeling like it's not hard to do in this scenario.
Well, it's a little harder than he thinks it is.
Uh-oh.
Have a lead block sealed, and they'll have a neutron or a particle, and if you're observing it, it won't go through, but then for some reason, it's been duplicated thousands of times. If you're not observing it, it suddenly jumps across. It wants you to know something. And then they've also noticed that if humans observe electrons and quarks, that literally, so it's kind of like George Lucas, but not in a cheesy way, because it's subatomic, it changes observance, changes what's happening.
Do you mean midichlorians?
It's absolutely insane. And they've hooked up electron microscopes, spectrometers, in Japan to say, well, maybe it's because there's humans near it. And then they'll hook it up, and then they'll have all these humans in the room around it, but not looking at it because they can't see it. And then as soon as somebody in Russia or Japan or America, back to Japan, looks at it through the electron microscope. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not the quantum mechanics person. I just know that's what's going in unified field theory. I've read a lot of books on it, into all of this. And so it's there. There's a whole... And look.
So Alex is trying to blow some minds, right. And then Kurt says entanglement,
right.
And Alex is like, uh-oh, he knows a word.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Once you're past...
Look, I'm not the quantum mechanics guy. It's all unified field theory and blah. Yeah. Look, move
once,
along.
Once, like, the smartest thing you can say is to reference, literally, spooky action at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that they call it. That's the original thing. Spooky action at a distance. It's real spooky. Yep. That's what scientists did.
Yeah, and Alex doesn't, first of all, understand this stuff at all.
Nope.
But it's amazing how quickly he retreated once there was, like, some...
Yeah. Oh, entanglement. Then I will run away!
I was killing it with the demon stuff.
Yep, yep.
And then he started talking a little bit about quantum physics.
Well, it's real. Some of it's real.
Right.
The problem with quantum physics, it sounds like a movie, but some of it's actually true.
Mm. Yeah. Well, but here's the thing.
What?
If you start a set...
Sure.
As a stand-up.
Yeah.
And you're doing well.
Yeah.
Talking about X.
Sure.
And then you start talking about Y.
Right.
And the audience is like, ugh.
Yeah.
You might go back to X.
Yeah. Comfortable waters.
So let's get back to demons.
Good call.
So that's what's a cat seeing? How does it decipher it? Because all we have is the archetypes of our genetic ancestors imprinted on us to be able to decode things.
Is that all we have?
So again, maybe demons
don't, we
really
have
don't look like demons to themselves, but to us, that's the only way we're able to see them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've read Childhood's End.
I follow what you're saying for sure.
Have you done DMT ever?
Shut up, Kurt.
Here's the deal. I don't want to take it.
I would co-host a show with
because
Kurt.
I remember reading
only if
about
I could
DMT
say that.
And ayahuasca experiences and going, well, I have those experiences every night. Crystal cities, floating pyramids, beautiful stuff like big watchmen, angels.
Do you mean
like,
low oxygen dreams? That you literally just explained?
That are so real.
Low oxygen.
No, they're real.
And, you explained that.
No, they're real.
And just give me profound knowledge and profound sense of completion and peace. And it's that archetype of the watchmen or the angels. And everybody, and you know, the ancients.
It's low oxygen.
You told me this. So I have DMT-like experiences. And before I knew how to control it, a lot of it was bad stuff. I've seen, when I read the books about it, well, I've seen that in my dreams. Well, I just made the decision that I'm with the higher power. I'm with God. I control my spirit. I control my energy. I change the channel. I'm going to go to Valhalla. I'm going to go see stuff that looks like 1,000 times more powerful than Hawaii and the most beautiful rainbow you ever saw. And,
sure.
And I know it's real because and again, it's just like observing a particle. If you're watching it, it won't do it. Hundreds of times in my life, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, when I was a kid, which, you know, like I have a digital clock in the kitchen, I'd wake up and I'd say,
don't tell me the 4 a.m. story again.
15.
God damn
it. And I would run down to the kitchen, and every time it was whatever time it was. And maybe I wake up at 5 a.m. and I'd say, it's 5:04. It was always this thing saying, go look at the clock. I'm here. I want you to know this is real.
Yes. My low oxygen dreams were prophetic and real because I knew what time it was. Because God was telling me what time it was. Look, I do think there's something actually kind of interesting in what Alex is saying.
Sure.
That idea of, you know, you're having this terrible dream and then you change the channel. I have had that experience.
Sure.
When, you know, you have a nightmare and you recognize it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
There, you can change the entire surrounding.
Yeah, you go
that
past.
You're in.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that any of it is real.
No. I wonder. So this makes me so concerned, right? Because it makes me wonder, like, should we almost entirely give up on that idea of the consciousness has control and more just really truly accept that we are only aware of the physical processes after they occur?
Hmm.
You know, like, Alex cannot be anything other than what Alex is because biologically Alex is Alex. And there's nothing that can be done about that.
Mm.
Those low oxygen dreams, if somebody had gone to him and gotten him a sleep apnea machine when he was 9,
right.
If everything had gone the exact same way, but the man dreamt normally for a fucking month 100 years ago.
I mean, who knows? He might have been Tucker.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is that? There's just... It's just so fucking, yeah.
Thing that makes him interesting and different than everybody else is maybe a function of his low oxygen dreams that he's had.
And that's it. Yeah. And that's it, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking.
Or inspiring.
It could be.
You know, you hear
anybody
stories
could
about
be from
people
anywhere.
Who, like, they only became the track star that they are because they broke their leg or something like that. You know, you hear that.
I would never have become the great liar I am if I had no idea that reality was different.
Yeah. So anyway, your buddy Kurt,
Sure.
He wants there to be aliens.
Sure.
And Alex is saying it's all dimensional stuff.
Sure, sure.
He wants there to be space aliens.
There better be space aliens. Come
okay,
on.
Okay, wait, I have a question. Why would it just be interdimensional? Why wouldn't it be yes and?
Okay, good question, but
say,
shut
oh,
up,
preposterous,
Kurt.
It would come from other planets. How is that more? I'm sure the interdimensional thing could possibly be true. But the interplanetary thing is crazier than that? How would that be?
Well, I'll go back to Frank Herbert, which is out of quantum mechanics. This is actually what the quantum mechanics experts believe. Let's take this piece of
Frank Herbert
and say
the guy who died before.
Right here is Betelgeuse or some star. You know, however
is this
many
the tunneling thing? We all know this.
Well, I mean, I'll show people. Let's say there's a galaxy 50 light years away. Okay. Okay.
How long does it take light to get there?
And here's this planet that we want to go to. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're trying to go 50 light years with current technology, even if we had light speed, it'll take you 50 years to get there. Now, interdimensionally, all you got to do is fold the piece of paper.
He's folding a piece of paper to
demonstrate.
He's
doing the fold space. Yeah.
You're able to do this, and that's the theory of the third dimension. There's higher dimensions, mm-hmm. and then all you do is punch a hole. And you're basically instantly there. So that's like somebody, before they invented the wheel, looking at a chariot and saying, what does that do? So see, take you 50 years to get there with the
technology
we don't even have yet. But if you interdimensionally travel there, you're there instantly by folding. That's fold space.
Right. How's that different? All right.
Okay.
Okay. They're unimpressed,
Pass.
But also like,
Pass.
Oh, whatever. Whatever.
Pass.
So you have one last clip.
I mean, because here's the more interesting thing about that, right? The more fun thing about Alex's bullshit is not that it takes 50 light years to get from here, or it takes 50 years from here to a star 50 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
It's that in order to accelerate up to light speed, you can only go so fast, right?
Sure.
You can't accelerate from 0 to 300 meters per second, square.
Yeah.
You know? So it takes you a year and a half, 2 years to get up to percentage of light speed, right?
Right, right.
And during that time, you're also moving at different speeds relative to the rest of the universe. Mm-hmm. So not only are you moving at, like, say, a day faster than your buddy as you go along, but over time, that's also changing. So you don't even know how old you're going to be in relation to other people
right.
until you leave, right? And then after all of that is done...
Yeah.
You're never going to get back.
Sure.
There's nowhere to go. Everybody you know is dead.
That's why you got to fold the paper.
And that is why Charlton Heston was so pissed off.
At that chair?
At that fucking statue, man.
Now, hear me out on this.
Yeah. What do you got?
In my perfect world.
Sure.
Alex does this.
Okay.
Demonstration with the guys at the folding paper.
Pokes
a hole.
Yeah.
Illustrates it. And then... Here's a origami crane.
Ah, that would be fun. That would be
just
fun.
Just to show off.
Just to add a little odd job to it.
Because honestly, they seemed very unimpressed with what he did, what he showed them with
the
folding.
I mean...
Because it's unimpressive.
Well, Dune came... The new Dune came out just a couple of years ago.
Well,
so.
Frank Herbert wrote Quantum Physics.
He did, a while back.
Mm-hmm. So, we have one last clip. And Alex... He's talking about his dreams some more.
Sure, yep.
And the crystal palaces and what have you.
Still mad.
And then I decided I'm out of here.
Good call.
I wish I had crew in the studio because they've been showing for about a month this AI rendering of castles and mountains and the universe and how it changes. And when I saw them play that, I went, that's where I go. That's one of the things I've seen basically exactly. Well, here's AI scraping the art and visions of billions of people, and then you put into it the cosmos, heaven, and then it literally shows you what the collective unconscious already has. So that is the power of AI.
Wow.
Is that it scrapes fragments of what we're doing in the conscious and unconscious that bubble up to the conscious, and then it is, in many of these things I've seen, manifesting some really deep, powerful stuff. There's no crew in there, is there? Too bad everybody's probably gone. Or
now, that's a metaphor.
I'm going to send you this.
There's no crew in
okay.
there.
And I'm telling you, the stuff I see in these dreams is just like this, but even more blazing and gorgeous and just, you know, way more powerful. But when I saw this for the first time, I was like, whoa, that's very similar to what I see. And I'd never seen art like that, never seen culture like that, never seen what I'd seen, one of the things I see. And then AI, though, It saw it because it's scraping billions of people.
Mm-hmm.
So before we go, you tweeted this out, and I just wanted to end our conversation talking a little bit about Israel. You said,
"Yeah, I'm out. I'm out. Nope. You do not transition from this bullshit nonsense conversation to, hey, let me ask you a serious question about Israel. Well, fuck off.
While we're on the topic of very important things,
AI is scraping your dream vacation home.
Alex, your complete made up fictional universe based entirely around your illness. That is interesting. Tell me about Israel.
I wonder, are people just like legitimately afraid to call him nuts? Like, are people just afraid to listen to that and push back because they think he's going to push back even harder? I don't know what the deal is, but if you have any self-respect, first of all, you're not going to then ask your closing question about some very serious
topic.
Somebody
needs to throw something.
But you're not going to listen to this whole Tucker Carlson got attacked by a demon nonsense. I have oxygen-deprived dreams that have formed my worldview that you should all take very seriously. Mm. And is based on science fiction movies that I can't stop name dropping. How would you, if you had any self-respect, not be like, here's a follow-up question. But these dreams, they're not real. You don't know what time it is. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that I've ever, as far as comedians go, you know, that whole like, oh, comedians are truth tellers, you know, that whole thing. I've never bought into any of that. Mm-hmm. The only thing, truly, that I think comedians and clowns are that cannot be done by anything else is the kid who says the emperor has no clothes. You know, like that's who we are. We're the people who, everybody else is standing around.
You and Jim Brewer have a lot in common.
I mean, not fuck that guy. Fuck everybody.
COVID has no facts.
I just mean like that's what we're here. I'm willing to be called a clown. I'm willing to have everybody laugh at me because that's what it means for me to be able to say, Jesus Christ, Alex Jones just said he only has enough oxygen to barely survive, and that's where everything you think he believes comes from.
Yeah.
He just doesn't breathe good.
All the things that he pretends are based on, like, this extensive research and thousands of books, and no, it's things that he's had hallucinations from lack of oxygen that he feels are prophecy.
There are two atoms that are not often enough in Alex's brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it does explain a whole lot.
Yeah,
I mean, the where the rubber meets the road is that the politics that he has created on top of those delusions and those hallucinations that he's deemed prophecy are things that are really dangerous. They hurt a lot of people. People were obviously killed through the vaccine denialism, the hydroxychloroquine stuff.
Yep.
People are targeted and at risk due to his transphobia and his increasingly towards just outright entire LGBTQ community denial. He's a racist. He would see all immigrants banished.
Yeah.
These are the real world pieces that are built upon his house of lack of oxygen.
Right. And that's the clown. That's the clown. That's me being like, hey, listen, you have built an entire fucking worldview that is all structurally dependent on not enough oxygen getting to this man's dreams. So I don't know if you want to start from scratch, but maybe I would.
I mean, I think a lot of people should ask some hard questions.
You'd think.
Yep.
You'd
myself
think.
Included, because I've created a show about a guy who's just lacking oxygen to his brain.
I think what we've inadvertently stumbled onto, perhaps the greatest problem of our time. Maybe we just need to be cramming more oxygen in sleeping conservatives' brains.
Hey, it's clear that, I mean, if this is the only instance of this being bad, sleep apnea is a huge problem.
It's a huge problem.
Because it's created this in one person.
It's destroyed the world.
So here's our message.
Yes. Sleep apnea.
Breath hygiene.
Serious problem.
Yeah. We all need to...
get a fucking dehumidifier.
Does that help? So anyway...
Oh, God.
I'm glad...
Let's talk about Darfur.
I'm glad that we went back and looped back and got the rest of this.
I do feel like it's important. Yeah.
I left the first Jimmy Dore episode feeling Jimmy bored, and I didn't feel inspired at all about what was going on. It just seemed like a dumb interview that Alex was saying all the same shit. And to an extent, this is also a lot of the same shit that Alex says in a bunch of these interviews. But this gave me a little bit more of a window, and I think I'm a little bit more interested. For one, Jimmy has no fucking spine whatsoever.
None.
And allows Alex to just run over everything and go wherever he wants with no pushback.
I mean, nuts.
Second, Jimmy does seem like maybe he's someone who it would be more interesting to cover, because I do think he's further down the road than I had assumed.
Yeah, I would agree.
The second half of this definitely had more indications to me that, like, he's closer to Alex than I thought. For sure.
Right.
Not as much of a showman, ironically, because he's a professional comedian.
You think, yeah.
Not as much chops.
Not funny.
No.
And
I love how much you don't like Kurt Metzger.
I really
do. And I think it would be funny to subject you to it.
It will be fun. I'm actually almost even looking forward to yelling, "Shut up, Kurt." No, I think what is interesting for me right out the gate, and why I'd like to do more Jimmy Dore, is the fact that he didn't, like, always go along. The fact that he just let Alex ramble without then always being like, and here's what I agree
There's
with.
There's sometimes where he joined a riff and sometimes not.
I would like to know how much of this was just him being like, Alex is on the show, let him talk, that's dollar signs, and how much of it is like, we want Alex to get his message out.
Yeah, I am curious about that. Yeah. And then there's also some dangling threads, like he, you know, I haven't watched enough of his content to fully know what his position on some of these issues are.
Sure.
He said he switched his position on immigration.
I don't want to know what he thinks about Israel.
No. Well, I kind of do. I may have seen
a
clip of that.
Professionally, you don't have a choice. Yeah.
But, like, I may be interested in, like, what does that mean? You switched your position on immigration. What is it now? I know it's not good, but what is it?
What was it?
Well, you said more immigrants, the better.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not really a position, though, is it?
No, but maybe that's just how he's characterizing it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Might not be fully what his position was in the past, but I'm not sure what it is now.
Sure.
Is he, like, legit a full-on all vaccines are wrong?
Yeah.
Is he a climate change denier? Like, how much of these positions are actual things that he stakes out and he stands behind?
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious in that.
I am, too.
I don't know how fervently I'll seek this as a topic to cover, but but at least this was, I think, a little bit more interesting than the first one.
Yeah, I agree.
And we got to learn that Tucker got attacked by demons.
I'm not going to be able to handle a couple of, like, this was a couple of revelations on this episode really, truly make me, like, both furious, hopeless.
And it's appropriate that revelations, because they have to do with demons
indeed
and the end of the world.
Yep.
So anyway, we'll be back, Jordan, for another episode. But until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. And social media exists.
We are on socials media.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Eh.
Anyway.
I like Instagram because I'm into whales now. I just really like looking. They're so big.
We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Liam DZX Clark. You know it would be great. Alex should be on the Traitors. Can you imagine?
I absolutely can. He can't.
Should he be
enough.
A traitor?
Oh my God. Yes. Of course.
Can you imagine?
I'm not a traitor.
The first round
the
table.
He's getting tapped on the arm. He's like, it's a good thing I'm not getting tapped on the arm right now.
No, I mean the first time when there's accusations flying around.
Oh, yeah.
Call suspicion to himself. Oh, it'd be great.
It's me.
Season three. Alex.
Here we go. But he has to wear Hannibal Lecter. He has to always be tied up Hannibal Lecter style.
Hear me out. The three.
To the audience, you can't see the excitement.
The hand waving.
Yes, the hand waving
the three,
is astonishing.
Chosen people who will be the
traitors.
Traitors.
The three traitors, season
Alex
three.
Jones.
Uh-huh.
Bill Gates. Steve Pachanik.
Okay. All right.
That crew. Well, we...
Let me pitch you this
No
one.
Female representation.
Let me pitch you this. Alex Jones.
Very white team of traitors.
Alex Jones, the British TV presenter.
Okay.
And then, we're going to go with Steve Pachanik again.
Yeah, okay,
you got Steve Pachanik.
Anyway, we'll be back.
Woo!
And now here comes the sex robot.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.